This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. You're listening to The Kevin Kelly Show, exclusively here on placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. And now, here's your host, the voice of Ring of Honor, Mr. Kevin Kelly.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of The Kevin Kelly Show here on the Place to Be Nation and placetobenation.com. I want to thank all of you who have enjoyed or endured The Kevin Kelly Show thus far. Episode 19 on your way here tonight with one of our, man, we have been blessed to have so many great guests. Huge guests in the professional wrestling industry. Everybody from Ring of Honor, former world champion Adam Cole in our debut episode, IWGP heavyweight champion AJ Styles. In fact, those two men, both in the top 10 of the PWI 500 this year. So I think that, you know, we're getting some pretty heavy hitters. We had Diamond Dallas Page on this show. Our most recent interview with Dr. Tom Pritchard, I've gotten more positive feedback about that interview than just about any other that we've done. But tonight, we're going to look to take it even further. We're going to look to take it even higher. We're going to look to take it all the way with the one and only Matt Hardy. Matt Hardy is our guest here tonight. This man is an icon. He is one of the biggest stars in professional wrestling over the last 15 years. And his track record of success is virtually second to none. Combine that with his longevity, and you have an iconic star for the ages. So we just have a few minutes before we get Matt Hardy on the phone. We do a lot of stuff here on the Kevin Kelly Show on the Place to Be Nation. We talk about professional wrestling. We also have some fun and games, and later on we'll play a game. We'll look at some trending stories, some things that are happening kind of off the beaten path, maybe not related to professional wrestling in general. I'll also share some stories from time to time with my 23, you know, coming from my 23 years of experience in the industry. It still amazes me that I've been in wrestling this long. But over the years, I've gotten some good stories together and we'll share them from time to time. In fact, I'll have a good road story a little bit later on. And it is just a pleasure to be here with all of you each and every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show. Now, of course, Ring of Honor Wrestling is where I'm spend a lot of my time right now. But I've also spent a lot of years in the World Wrestling Federation, World Wrestling Entertainment. A lot of fans have now seen some of the work I used to do as part of the WWE Network. It's hard to imagine that Matt Hardy, and Matt and Jeff Hardy, to me, of course, are one, because they came in together, that I've known them for as long as I have. Matt just celebrated a birthday recently, and it's a milestone birthday, and to think that I've known him for that long, it just blows my mind. These were kids. These were kids when I first met them. Now, they were, Jeff was still a teenager, Matt was in his early 20s, but you get the point. It's just, it's amazing how far and how fast and how everything, how time just flies. But that's, to me, the best part of life is living it and enjoying it. And I know Matt has been through a lot. He's overcome a lot, though. And the positive message that we try to portray here on The Kevin Kelly Show, we try to do interviews that you're not going to hear anywhere else. We allow our guests to talk and we discuss their true passion and their true love. And the reasons why they're in professional wrestling and what it is that they do and why they do it and what motivates them and what fuels their fire, what gets them out of bed every single day. And when you're somebody like Matt Hardy, who is as great as he is, and I'm not kissing his ass for a reason, he's great, okay? When you're a star on Monday night during the height of the Monday Night Wars, you can tell everybody to go kiss your ass because I'm better than you. And that's the truth. A lot of these guys in the indies today, they think they're stars. They're not stars at the level of Matt Hardy. Matt Hardy has FU money. He doesn't need any of us. He doesn't need any of you. He could go away. He could build mountains on islands or islands on mountains, whatever it is he wants to do because he's got enough cash. But he still does professional wrestling all the time and very well because he loves it. So that's what we're going to talk to Matt Hardy about. Now, Justin Rosero is my producer, Dan McGinn helping out as well. And JR, let's let the folks know where they can find the Kevin Kelly Show, not just for the special Matt Hardy episode, but every single episode, including all 18 previous episodes previously archived. Tell them how to do it. Come on, now's your time.
You can find this fine show, The Kevin Kelly Show, in any of the following ways. You can visit placetobenation.com, click on the Kevin Kelly Show banner, or the PTBN podcast banner on the right-hand side. You can subscribe to the Place to Be podcast feed on iTunes or visit Stitcher.com, subscribe to the Place to Be podcast. You can also download our very own Place to Be Nation podcast app at placetobe.podbean.com/mobile on your iPhone or iPad. Also, you can now find a special Ring of Honor edition of the show exclusively at ROHWrestling.com. In addition to the 18 episodes of The Kevin Kelly Show, if you click on the Kevin Kelly banner at PTBN, you get all of Kevin's great appearances on the Place to Be podcast. He started in 1996, went all the way through 2003. Twice a year, he'd come on, talk about the years that he was experienced, all the backstage news, stories, gossip, and everything else that my partner Scott and I would grill him with. So be sure to check those out as well if you love hearing about the Attitude Era and that time frame in WWF history. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at @place2bnation and at @realkevinkelly. You can like us on Facebook at facebook.com/place2bnation. If you have any questions or suggestions for us, Kevin Kelly Show at place2bnation.com or tweet us at using #AskKevin with the KK capitalized. And now I'm going to throw it back to my good friend Kevin because it is time to talk to Matt Hardy.
Thanks, JR. Boy, I tell you, I said right off the bat, I was really excited for this. I, you know, we've had so many big guests. We've been blessed to have so many big guests here on the 18 episodes of The Kevin Kelly Show. But this is the one that I really think is going to take this show to the next level. And I'm so happy he agreed to do it. You know him as, you know, I mean, pioneer of TLC matches, a true icon. I mean, this man has done it all. He is everything now in professional wrestling. He's Matt Hardy. And he's on the Kevin Kelly Show. How you doing, Matt?
I'm doing great, Kevin, and I am happy to be on the Kevin Kelly Show. I'm actually honored you consider me and gave me such a warm introduction. Thank you very much.
Well, I'm so proud of you. And I know you just had your big birthday last week, so happy birthday.
Thank you.
And I started by talking about how long I've known you and your brother. And I still have the Omega shirt that you guys gave me way back when.
Awesome.
So I feel like I've known you for your whole life, even though I met you when you were in your early 20s. But it just it blows my mind how time elapses and it goes by in decades and it feels like an instant. And here we are now. I've known you since 1997 and here we are in 2014 and we're talking together on, you know, on the Kevin Kelly Show. I just think it's cool.
It is so cool. It's really amazing the relationships you build in wrestling and how, you know, you hear this a lot, but I think wrestling, it may be more of a community than any other place where you work with someone and, you know, especially like during those WWF, WWE days, you know, when we were together, those TVs, those are long days. And, you know, especially the talent, the wrestlers, I mean, you're with one another more than you're with your family and you're with those guys and you spend time and you bond and you get close. And then you may have a period where you don't see one another for 5-6 years, but then once you reconnect, it's almost like, you know, you never left. That's one thing that's really cool about the wrestling business, and you're right, the time does fly. It flies by in decades, but it seems like an instant.
So I remember talking with you and Jeff right after you guys had signed, and you were just getting rolling. Hadn't done the first the Terry Invitational Tournament yet. We really hadn't gotten to that point yet. And I remember we were talking about you guys traveling together and being part of a little ribbitry amongst the boys. You guys, to me, always came across so well-adjusted, like so mature and prepared for this opportunity, whereas I don't know if some other guys would have come into that spot that you were given at that time, at that opportunity, and handled it so well. What do you attribute your success of handling that pressure and doing so well in that big spot?
I'll be honest. I think that just because Jeff and I were such big fans, and we grew up in, you know, the middle of nowhere, North Carolina, which equates to Cameron. And, you know, just the more I even learn about after being married to my wife, who grew up in New York City in Queens, and Jeff and I were lucky we could read and write. Our dad raised us, our mom died young, so we were lucky to be as intelligent as and as educated as we were, and we got a lot of opportunities just by getting out and traveling, doing wrestling in smaller territories or independent groups. But once we got to WWE, I think our attitude was going to remain humble because we were so appreciative. Like, we came from nothing. We came from such a small area where the city limits, the city population of Cameron is less than 300. It still is. And to get that chance to go to WWE and work with everyone and do whatever, we were just happy to be there. And if we weren't winning on a certain night, or we weren't getting the push we thought we deserved, or we weren't getting the payoff we thought we deserved, I mean, we were just very appreciative that we were there. And I just can't tell you how grateful we were during that whole period. And I think that's what kept us humble more than anything else. We never got into an attitude of like, oh my God, like, we're not getting what we deserve right now. We need to, like, you know, stand up ourselves and make a stink. I think during that early period, even though there are times in the business where you do need that, I think during that early period, we were just so grateful to be there that we were just there to be the perfect employees.
Who were some of the veterans that took you guys under their wing?
It's, one of the first names that pops in my head, a guy who really felt like he was, you know, a top guy. He obviously was. He was one of the greatest superstars of all time. Stone Cold would always, like, you know, take time to give us advice, or, like, you know, instead of throwing that punch on a comeback, I remember one time a piece of advice that stuck with me. He said, instead of coming in and firing back with punches, he said, why don't you throw clotheslines? He said, they look a lot more vicious. He said, they look a lot more vicious and malicious, like you're trying to do damage in there. Just little nuggets of information here and there. The Undertaker was another guy. You know, once you actually got to know him and he was, you know, he was willing to accept you as part of the wrestling community there, he was always great about giving feedback and giving you advice. And it's so strange. I mean, it took probably, you know, 4, 5, 6 years before we got a really good grasp on, like, how things work from a political aspect there, you know, and how things work in the wrestling business. And in some ways, you know, that feels unfortunate, but in some ways it was great because we just went out and we busted our ass and we did what we needed to do to make the entire match better. And we were never selfish about things. And, you know, I'm very happy that we got that opportunity. And I think we made great things happen when we first started as the Hardys.
How does it feel? And I give, and again, trendsetters and guys who you guys created an entire generation of wrestling. And yeah. And every, you know, you go to any independent show and any card anywhere in America, anywhere around the world, through the course of the, you know, early, you know, late 1998, 99, 2000 and beyond, there were the Hardy Boys, although it was the guys who emulated your style and your look. How does that feel? Does all that sink in? Do you ever step back and say, wow, I can't believe that I had that kind of influence, or that Jeff and I were, you know, really did that, because we were just two humble guys from Cameron.
Yeah, it really didn't. It didn't until later. I mean, I remember the point when we first got a P.O. box, and every week we would come home, there would be probably a dozen demo tapes in there of people either in their backyard jumping off ladders through tables, or wearing the Hardy Boy gig, or doing swantons, or doing twisted, you know, whatever it may be. And, you know, we always thought it was cool. Oh, my God. But we didn't grasp how immense that was at that time. You know, and looking back now in hindsight, like, oh, my God, it's so crazy. And I think it was very inspiring to other people, because after hearing our story, which is very true, two young dreamers who came from a very small rural town in North Carolina who only had this big dream, and they kept, you know, working and working and working to find the odds to make it. I mean, we were like, you know, the majority of normal, casual people in the United States that loved wrestling, especially young males. You know, so, like, a lot of people really bonded with us because we seemed like not just larger than, like, superstars that were 6'8", 350 pounds. We seemed like someone that they would be friends with if they knew us in their regular life. And then even the outfits that we had. Now, someone didn't have to necessarily go to a seamstress or a seamster and go get a pair of tights or a pair of briefs or trunks. You know, they could actually go to Gadzooks, or they could go to, you know, Hot Topic, and they could buy a pair of kickwear pants and they could get a tight t-shirt. So, you know, it's amazing that trend became such a fad during that period. And looking back now, it's mind blowing. It happened so fast. It was really hard to absorb all that at once. But looking back now, it's just so humbling.
two of the best ribs that I, you know, there's three great ribs in wrestling, right? One is that Paul Bearer had to carry the urn for all those years, which is just make him travel with it. Two is that John Cena had invested thousands of dollars in various boots and trunk combinations that he never wore once he got pushed because he went to the pump-up sneakers and the cutoff jeans. And you did your own seamstress work to make gear. And then when you guys got to the top, you didn't need to make gear anymore. You could go with more of a off the rack look. So
right. And what's funny is that I was just having this conversation with my wife yesterday. I mean, I dedicated hours, hundreds of hours to actually learning. I put out my mom's old sewing machine that she had when she was still alive, and I dusted it off, and I greased it up, and I committed myself to learning how to sew because tights and gear was so expensive early on, and I made all of my, my stuff in Jeff's, and then also made, almost all the Omega guys, and I got to the point before we signed with WWE, I was making dozens of people's gear up and down the East Coast. It was like actually my third source of income. I would wrestle and promote shows. I would sew gear, and then I would haul pine straw. Those are the three things I did to make money, between going to college, and then eventually I got my associate's degree and then left college to pursue wrestling. And I guess I was very lucky that worked out. But, I spent all that time to learn how to sew and do whatever, and then we're wearing these tights, and that kind of becomes our trademark until time to change and we get the overhaul, and then it's just buy right off the shelf. So it is pretty interesting that story happened that way, but it turns out to be a curse as far as the rib goes, but also a blessing.
Yeah, it's a good career move on your part there. No, I'm going to be indignant because I've taught myself how to sew. Damn it, this is what we're going to stick with and do. You guys always went with the flow, and that was cool. And listen, that pine straw is not going to, haul itself, son. So get out there.
It certainly did not.
I bet. We're talking with Matt Hardy here, and I want to thank all the fans that are tuning in maybe for the first time here on the Kevin Kelly Show. And thank you for joining us. And Matt, of course, the Hardys, the Wolves, and Team 3D. In 1 week's time on Impact Wrestling, we'll have the final match of the tag title series. It is those matches have been, again, just a breath of fresh air in what has been kind of, in terms of the national cable wrestling promotions, Matt, it hasn't been the emphasis in the last few years on great, great wrestling. TNA going in the right direction. How do you feel about things there now?
I totally agree with all your thoughts there on wrestling on a national level as far as cable TV wrestling. I think TNA has had they've been very vigorous and very steadfast in trying to renew their wrestling brand as far as trying to give the fans more of what they want as far as actual compelling matches, good strong matches, and then stronger storylines. They still are going to keep the entertainment aspect, and you need that to a degree with casual fans. I mean, you can't just be all wrestling. One thing that I think Ring of Honor has done a great job, at in the last couple of years is trying to build more stories and build more characters as well. I actually felt like I was almost one of the special ones because I actually could come out and have a persona that the fans actually hated, but I would still go out and attempt to work hard as far as the match quality goes. But with TNA, especially with the tag team scenario, they basically gave myself, Jeff, Team 3D and the Wolves kind of open creativity to do whatever in these matches, and they gave us time. Like I said, they gave us that creative freedom. And the match that airs next week tonight, obviously, we just set it up. It's going to be a Full Metal Mayhem match, which is basically a TLC match. I have to call it something different because WWE owns the TLC. But the match that we have next week, I can say honestly, I went back and watched all the TLC matches we had in the Triple Threat Ladder match and the original table match, and in the first ever tag team ladder match we had with Edge and Christian. This match ranks up there with all those. I'm very proud of this. To go out there at 40 years old, and Jeff's 37, and Eddie was healthy. Davey had a broken leg 4 or 5 weeks ago, and he was very limited in what he could do. Bubba is Bobby. He's got himself in great shape, and Devon had a pulled groin. We went out there and had one hell of a match, and I'm really excited to see it back, and I'm excited for all of the wrestling industry to see it back, because it's one of those things to me. There was such a victory in building such a high standard 14 years ago, you know, and going out and still being able to do something on that level today. And tag team wrestling, you know, especially the matches you said that we had earlier, I think that they've been great. Tag team wrestling is a great division if it's paid attention to and is given love from the people that are running the show and booking. Ring of Honor, I obviously watch their product. I have nothing but the greatest respect and love for Ring of Honor. They revitalized my career more than anywhere else. But like the match with the Young Bucks and Briscoe a couple weeks back, absolutely tremendous. And I love, you know, Red Dragon, they're a great tag team. There's been some great tag team wrestling there. The Addiction are great, and there's a great tag division there. And I love seeing the utilization of tag teams in ROH and in TNA.
It's, you know, it's great to know that you have an influence. A few years ago, it was the Road Warriors that had that cross-promotional influence. And then it was Team 3D. And now it's you. You're the only contemporary who has WWE, TNA, and Ring of Honor ties. And all three are current. You're currently involved in a Ring of Honor storyline. You're featured on TNA television. And you're a Hall of Fame level talent in the WWE who's still thought of in reverence and as a trendsetter. So that's a remarable career, you know?
It is. It's amazing to really stop and think about that. And this is it's not a well-known fact, I'm sure, but I'm sure I will address it in my video earlier. I've learned how to promote myself and get the most out of everything you have. We had a weekend where I was, you know, on Thursday, it was myself and Jeff versus Team 3D. On Friday, I was featured on the WWE Network in a couple of the TLC matches. And on that Saturday, I was featured in Ring of Honor in a video package, handing over and retiring the iconic title to Maria Kanellis and then wrestling Michael Elgin. You know, so featured on 3 days back-to-back on all the major promotions. Mm-hmm. A pretty cool deal.
It is. And really, this has been just a remarkable career. We got a couple of questions that I know. I want to try to get to one right now because it's topical. Where would you rank? I mean, you've had an amazing 2014. And Brad PTBN wants to know, where would you rank this excellent 2014 versus the other years in your career?
This is a good year. it would rank high. I mean, it's hard for anything to outrank the year 2000. I mean, Jeff and I really hit the scene and we became stars. We got on the radar in 1999, and then we won the tag team titles, even though we weren't the best tag team in the world by far. It was a point where the tag team titles were helping us as opposed to us helping the tag team titles. And then we had the ladder match with Edge and Christian, which that's where we really turned the corner and went from just being, you know, WWE stars to being WWE superstars, and then we were going to be in the mix the majority of the time. 2000 is when we had, you know, the first ever tables match there. We had the triple threat ladder match at WrestleMania, which a lot of people considered a show stealer there at WrestleMania 2000. The first ever TLC. I mean, that was an amazing year. And it also it also carried over to the paydays. I mean, like being, you know, in the wrestling business for, you know, in the WWE for a couple years like that and making near $1 million in 1 year. It's hard to top a great year like that. But now this year is not only special just because I've done a lot of great things in Ring of Honor and in TNA, and some of the Omega stuff's been incredible. Myself and Jeff had one of our favorite tag team matches ever against the Briscoes. I can't say enough good things about those guys. But the scene this year also has been different. Besides just wrestling, I have done amazing numbers with the help of my wife on ShotMattHardy.com, which is my online store. Like I wear all that merchandise on TNA, I wear it on Ring of Honor, and it's done huge numbers. Also, myself and Jeff just brought back the HardyShow.com, which is like our online reality show, and we have, you know, all new vision for this. And just both of us are like focused now on like, you know, just living and being positive and you know, doing things the right way. I mean, we've both been hurt, we've both been beat up, we've both been in dark places, and we're both past that now. We're both more family men. And like we think about, we balance out life and wrestling. There's been times before where we were sucked in that wrestling lifestyle. You know, if you're hurt and you can't move, do whatever it takes to wrestle. And no, that's not the right way. You know, now I'm very specific. Like when I had 4 days of TV with TNA, I made sure the next weekend was off. You know, I get up every morning, and I know it drives my wife crazy. You know, I get up, I'm 30 minutes of cardio, I'm on my, you know, inversion table, I'm stretching, I'm doing this, I have yoga, I have workouts. That night, another workout, you know, and just everything I focus on is keeping my body as healthy as possible. And if I can wrestle 1 or 2 days a week and put in a good performance, I mean, I love doing it. I'll do it as long as I can, as long as I'm happy and healthy. Those are my most two important things now.
And, of course, you know, your successful 2014 campaign goes back into 2013 because you're right up on your anniversary. So happy anniversary coming up here in a few days.
Thank you.
What has married life taught you? How has being married changed you? Other than by force, because Rebbe would whip your ass if you didn't do something.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah, and you're right because it has. Because I, you know, growing up where I grew up, we didn't have any sisters. Myself and Jeff, our mom died young, so we were very much, you know, a male family, male heavy. You know, I hadn't been around a lot of females. Obviously, you know, dated people in the past, whatever it may be. But like just being with someone and being committed to Rebbe, and I was ready to get married. I was already committed as if I was married before we were married. So that wasn't an issue. But it's just learning how to, you know, being a team. You know, you no longer get to be selfish. When you're single, you always make the decisions, and no one can stop you. But when you're married to someone and you have, you know, that relationship, you have to consider them and everything. And there has to be, you know, there has to be a happy medium between both of you. And you just learn how to not be selfish. And it's helped me, like, from a relationship standpoint, definitely mature emotionally. You know, and there's those times where you're going to have differences of opinion, you know, but when it's all said and done, you just got to work it out and you got to learn to get past it. And, you know, sometimes with Rebbe and I, as we've grown together, we've both gotten better because we're both two very powerful, strong personalities. And it's very easy for us to clash. And we've got to the point where we clash less than we have in the past, you know, and we'll settle it and we'll squash it and we'll figure it out and we'll come to a happy resolution. But
right.
It's just one of those things, you know, you just have to learn how to not be selfish. You have to learn how to be selfless.
And it's funny because now my wife and I, we've been married for 23 years and we were very close a few, let's see, 10 years ago on the verge of divorce, like trial separation, the whole thing. And we came together realizing that we needed to learn how to communicate. So we had been together all that time and we lived together a couple of years before we got married. But we still didn't know how to talk to one another when adversity struck. And adversity strikes every couple. We just had to learn how to quit dragging up every issue that had ever come on board and just deal with the issue at hand. And sometimes just say, you know what, you're right. You just need to, you're just venting and I just need to listen. And sometimes that's the hardest thing.
It is. I mean, and I'm in that exact same boat. And I almost feel like, you know, we started that earlier, I guess, than you did. And I'm just glad that we've, you know, this has been an obstacle that we've seen and we've met and we've learned how to get over it and get past it and keep moving. And you're right. It is one of the hardest things. Sometimes you just need to, you know, sometimes as the husband, as the male, you just need to sit there and be quiet and let your wife vent or do whatever. You know, and it's just about, it's so weird because, like, I know how I am. Like, you feel like you want to control everything. You want to, you know, you want to make good decisions, especially if you're in a positive, good place. You want to make good decisions, but when you're married, it's not always your decision. It's not always your call. You have to come to a compromise, and sometimes that's really hard to do. But you have to talk and you have to work it out, and you can't give up on one another.
Well, so happy early wedding anniversary. What is she around? Will she listen to this? Can you tell us what you got her, or is it a secret?
Yeah, no, I have. I've gotten it already. She got a watch that she'd been wanting for quite a while. So she's very tickled by having it. If you look at any of the pictures you have, you will see it. And believe me, thank God Ring of Honor booked me a lot because Big Money Matt had to go out and buy this watch.
Big Money Matt Hardy. Yeah, that line from Jay Briscoe, I still hear that in my mind all the time. It's great. All right, so... one of the things we talked about offline before tonight, and I had speculated on it, was, hey, what's stopping Ring of Honor and TNA from working together? My thought was, there's no promotion that shouldn't work with another promotion. We're not in direct contact with one another, cable versus broadcast, different audience, different times, et cetera, et cetera, and neither promotion has sold every ticket to every live event. So, to me, there's money left on the table. Am I right or am I wrong? What do you think?
I absolutely agree with you. I would have liked to be doing this already. I mean, I just think the only thing that would truly stop it is just egos. You know, I think we're in a scenario where, you know, WWE is a machine. Nothing is going to stop or slow down WWE. You know, it's going to keep doing its own thing. You know, Ring of Honor is on a completely different TV than TNA and Impact Wrestling is right now. I think the opportunity to do some sort of cross promotion between the two organizations, I think it could only, especially if done in a good way, in a intelligent way, I think he could do nothing but benefit both promotions, and he could build excitement. I think one of the things the business is missing most right now is just unpredictability, and that's also it's just a sign of the times. I mean, there's so much information out there. You know, information gets leaked. Things, you know, someone spots someone in an airport somewhere, it immediately gets, you know, sent into a wrestling newsletter, and then it's reported online. You know, it's just hard to keep secrets. It's hard to keep people guessing and surprised. I think you open up a whole new level. You open up a whole new can of worms as far as surprises go if you do something where, you know, two organizations like that would work together, and it would make for some good, unpredictable, surprising TV, and that shock is what wrestling is sorely missing right now. Like, oh my God, I can't believe this happened. This guy showed up. I remember as a kid, and I'm sure you did as well. Like, I mean, when you were watching TV when you were younger, before you were in the business full time, when you would see some guy come from NWA to WWF, or
oh yeah,
vice versa. I mean, that was one of the most exciting things you could see as a fan.
When it, you know, and think of all the different, and the like, the invasion, you know, was done so poorly between WCW and WWE, but you know, all the times, you know, Smoky Mountain invaded USWA, or you know, NWA and UWF. Or whatever it was, there was always some reason to watch and some reason to get excited. I was, you know, just driving around this weekend and was by the, you know, Hershey Park Arena. And I was like, oh yeah, that's where we did Raw. That was when Taz jumped over the railing and held up the sign. And Vince never smartened any of us up, by the way, that was going to happen. Like, all we thought it was just, you know, we didn't know it was part of the show.
I believe we were there. I believe we were booked there.
That's, and again, that type of unpredictability, who knows? But I think it's something, and you know, listen, I'm just a lowly announcer, Matt. I'm lowly. You're an iconic superstar, and if there is one man that can get Joe Koff and Dixie Carter to hold hands at the board of directors meeting, it's you. I could see you there. Leading the meeting.
This would be my pitch. I'd go, if Mr. and Mrs. Kevin Kelly can do it, and if Matt Hardy and Revy Scott can do it, then Joe Koff and Dixie Carter certainly can do it. You know, like I think there could be a healthy relationship there, and I would love to explore those options. And I would, you know, considering I have you know, such a rite of passage almost to both now, and I'm very familiar with the fan bases, I would love to be the guy to ignite it.
Well, you've got heat in Ring of Honor still, by the way, because no matter where you are, no matter where we go, there is Matt Hardy heat. It is lingering. It is palpable. We were in Wheeling, West Virginia last weekend, and you have tons and tons of heat. So thank you very much.
I love it. As they say, give me the heat.
How about you had the opportunity, of course, to get to know and work with Adam Cole. And I know you've been complimentary of Cole, of course, throughout. Talk about him, and what do you see about him that kind of sets him apart in your mind?
The biggest thing that I see about Adam Cole that sets him apart from everything else is just that at such a young age. How old is Adam now? Is he?
I think he's 26.
Okay,
he's 25 or 26.
I was gonna say 25. I was guessing 25, but I think when, you know, I first met him, he was 23, 24. But I know Adam is just so far ahead of the curve at such a young age. I mean, like, from a psychology standpoint, from a speaking standpoint, like, I was nowhere near that level when I was that age. I mean, it blows my mind. And the reason that happens is because he's gifted with it, you know. And as long as he stays healthy, he is not going to do anything except get better. I mean, from a psychology standpoint, I mean, it's amazing how good he is as a heel. And he understands, like, you know, what to do to get heat and how to work as a bad guy the right way. And on top of that, he's just such a great human being, you know, which makes him so much more likable, you know, but besides just being so talented and so gifted as a performer in ring, and, you know, especially as a character and on the microphone, you know, he's just such a great quality human being. And I really dig him. You know, there's always a soft spot in my heart for, you know, the guy that is a nice guy and he's a great performer, and also the chicks love him, you know. So that's one of those things, like, when you look back at, you know, Hardy Boys or, you know, the Rockers, Rock and Rolls, but, you know, he fits that mold of, like, the pretty guy, but yet he's got, like, a cool, mean streak to him. So I dig that. And it was a blast working with him, and the run that we'd had where I was his mentor, that was just so much fun. And it helped both of us out, you know.
Well, of course, you know, Maria Kanellis now, have you seen what they've done?
Of course,
with
yeah.
The iconic title, they've remade it now in their own image. It's the title of love. And just go to RHWrestling.com if you fans haven't seen it, because there's pictures of it all over there. It's covered in pink fur, and it makes Jay Briscoe's blood boil whenever he sees it. It's awesome.
Indeed. Yes, I have seen it. You know, it's almost like, you know, I'll tell you, after the iconic title, I thought it was very special. It was immaculate. It was special. It was magnificent, grandiose. You know, I might have a little heat with the title of love too, but I love this guy, so I'm glad. I'm glad they're still representing.
Absolutely. Hey, so you've got, and now you talk about taking time off, but you have a very busy schedule, because we know, of course, you got the big matchup on Impact Wrestling next week, but this coming weekend, you're going to be up in my neck of the woods. You're going to be up Maryland at Maryland Championship Wrestling for a big event. Talk about that. Do you have that information with you? You know what's going on?
I am. Yes, I am in Waldorf, which is about 45 minutes south of Baltimore, 45 minutes or an hour, and I'll be there Friday night. I am taking on Christian York, and I am currently the champion there in MCW and Maryland Championship Wrestling. So,
well, wait a minute. You're the champion everywhere, aren't you?
I have 8 titles now. I have dubbed myself the Octo Champ. And I would imagine the first thing that makes you think of is the Octo Mom.
Octo
Mom. I like the Octo Champ, and it's really caught on. It's funny. But yeah, I do. I have titles everywhere. And if you put my United States and the map, and I think you know this, you saw it earlier. I'm pretty sure you hit me up on Twitter. If you compare the states that I hold titles in to Obama's approval rating, I have more states.
It's
one of those things that the MCW run that I've had has been really good. Dan McDivitt, a great guy. A lot of times I see Jeff Jones there, which it's always great to see him. And it's been a lot of fun. I won the MCW title early this year and had matches with most of their mainstays in the promotion. Had a match with Luke Hawks where I unified the Extreme Rising title and the MCW title. And in this Friday, I wrestle Christian York, and Saturday, whoever wins between myself and Christian, and it's going to be me. Spoiler.
Spoiler alert.
I'm just confident. And then the next night, the number one contender faces whoever wins between myself and Christian. Unless it's a time limit draw, we might go an hour time limit draw, and it might be a triple threat Saturday night.
Well, listen, I know that you and Christian go way, 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 way back. Part of that whole Omega tree, right? Is
yeah.
That's a huge tree.
I held Christian York when he was a baby.
Talk
that
about
may,
some
that,
of
that. That may or may not be true.
It may or may not be true, but we'll go with it here. It's a good story. A lot of branches on that tree. Of course, Matt and Jeff are at the top of it, and the Omega promotion is still running strong. The Hurricane, big part
mm-hmm.
of it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to name some names. The Dupps.
Yeah, I mean, guys that you know that went on to sign contracts. There was, you know, myself. There was Jeff. There was the Hurricane Shane Helms, Shannon Moore. You know, later one of the Three Count and worked with me as my little MF-er. Jason Arndt, which was Joy Abs of the Mean Street Posse. Joy Matthews, who's now Joy Mercury. He's a big office employee at WWE. Christian York, who is the number one contender facing me this Friday night in Maryland Championship Wrestling, the Dubs. And Steve Carino was there as well. He actually was one of our mega guys, C.W. Anderson of ECW fame. God. He's still working with us currently. And your favorite, and probably everyone's sentimental favorite of Omega.
Say it.
First name Sham, last name Pain.
Oh, my gosh. I'm such a big Champagne fan. It makes me sick when I think about it. I got to get, you know what? I got to get Champagne on this show.
Oh, Jay, that would be the best.
Justin, Dan McGinn, write it down. We're getting Champagne on this show.
There you go.
I'm sorry, we keep cutting each other off. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say he is must-hear audio.
Oh, forget it. I could shut my mic off and walk away. He'll do the whole show by himself. I'm working on getting a couple of real heavy hitters, Matt. I want to run these names by you, see what you think. I'm going to get Wolfie and Jamie Dundee on this show.
That's going to make a hell of an entertaining show for sure.
Yeah. I want the PG-13 interview, and I'm also working on getting Dennis Stamp from
that is great. I've always suggested him, like PWS, the group out of Jersey. They say, like, who do you think would be a good novelty character? Like, I haven't worked with them forever, but I remember a couple years ago they did, and I was like, God, I would book Dennis Stamp. That'd be the first novelty guy I would book if I was going to do something. So I commend you on that. I think that's great booking.
Well, thank you. We're gonna.
I don't do any tricks.
See, there you go.
we got just enough drops. We keep his name alive here on the show.
Well, right. He's on that trampoline, brother. You never know when the phone's going to ring.
Brother, you never know. You got to be ready. Hey, so, all right. Where does all this go? Because obviously, I mean, all signs point to everything being in your favor, to an inevitable WWE return, does it not?
Maybe. I guess possibly. Question mark. Exclamation point. Period. Question mark. I guess, man, you know, one of those things, I felt like, you know, earlier on in my career, I was very goal-oriented and very goal-driven, and sometimes my passion overloaded, you know, that I had a real life as well. Now I've found a good, happy medium in those things. So, you know, if something works out down the road and, you know, there would be some kind of schedule, and it worked for everyone and everyone was happy about it, yeah, I'd never say never for sure. And, you know, I think, you know, a lot of people say that, you know, oh, my God, you and Jeff are so Hall of Fame worthy. I mean, I think that would definitely be cool, you know, one day down the road. So we'll see. But I, really, man, I'll be honest, Kevin, like, I just really don't have an end game. There's no goal that I have that I, like, have to get. Like, I'm happy with everything I've done. The biggest thing I'm working on now is growing, like, you know, my online shop and my online reality show, and there's several different TV projects that I have my hands on right now. You know, I'm just working on a lot of different stuff like that where I can continue to grow the Matt Hardy brand, and, you know, obviously I'm still very blessed that wrestling is still there for me. So I love the freedom of, you know, kind of being able to do what I want to, and that's something with WWE you don't always have. I think Brock has got an awesome deal, and I think Brock has done a great job. How he works only a few days, you know, a few days a month or whatever, a few days a year, and he's a killer, a champ, and Paul Heyman can be there to represent for him. And I'm not saying, like, I'm someone who deserves something like that, but, I mean, if there was something that worked out that was kind of like a part-time deal, I certainly would be, you know, I would certainly think about it, you know. And I think when it's all said and done, that's where we'll end things.
Well, so I know it gets to be a lot longer between matches.
Listen, I know that whatever that end game is, I have a feeling you're looking more forward than backwards. So if the WWE thing ever does come around, it will be on your terms and it will be done your way, because you guys are an attraction. I mean, Brock is an attraction and the Hardys are a great box office attraction. You still draw consistently. The houses go up every time you're there. So when the boys say, "Hey, thanks for the house, Matt," to you, they really do mean it.
That's very, very kind of you to say thank you. I mean, I've been blessed. I mean, you know, we both had great runs at WWE and television exposure, and especially me as a performer, like the length of years and the exposure I got was amazing. And I'm really happy that I can help guys like, you know, an Adam Cole or a Mike Bennett or whoever it may be, Kevin Steen, you know, work with guys like that and kind of rub off some of my WWE television exposure on those guys. I mean, and that's, you know, the gift that keeps giving. And by doing it with the new cool hip products like Ring of Honor, or, you know, or even doing something in TNA now, it wasn't the cool thing for the longest time. It was the exact opposite of cool, but they've had strong programming the last couple of months, and I'm happy and I'm proud to say that I think I'm a part of changing that, you know, as we've kind of changed the whole mentality of the approach they've taken towards wrestling and making the in-ring product a lot more important.
The idea too of with you, Matt, of your own brand, and shopmatthardy.com is your store. The Matt Hardy Show, is that the web address? Is it matthardyshow.com?
It's the Hardy Show. It's the Hardy Show.com.
The Hardy Show.com.
Yeah, and that's you know episodes, some are, you know, documentary style, some are real life exploits of myself and Jeff. We have an episode coming out in a couple of days, which is basically the whole day of our wedding, myself and Revy, and there'll be, you know, exclusive interviews from people that were involved in the wedding. It's a very, very cool idea, and there's a, you know, a lot of people that have been interested in this, and my wife, you know, she does the editing, and she's absolutely amazing. Like,
she's fantastic.
I might be the octo champ in professional wrestling, but she's the octo champ in real life. Like, she's the champion of photography, of video editing, of cooking. She's the champion of decorating, so many things. Like, she just has so many gifts. And I couldn't have done those great videos like the, you know, the money bed video at Ring of Honor or the anti-bullying video without her. I mean, hell, man, she performed my my theme song on a piano to go with that, you know, and shot it and edited it. If I can come up with an idea creatively, if my brain can create the idea, she can make it come to life. She's really got a gift.
Well, you're very blessed, and you've got a lot to be thankful for. One of the things that we've been doing, and we talked with Dr. Tom on our last episode, we've been kind of sharing some road stories. You got a quick road story for us? Something crazy that happened that, you know, that you can tell, you know, along the way, along the years, something you'd like to share?
Sure. Just a real simple one, and this was just fresh in my mind because I was talking about with Jeff a couple of days ago. We used to have a thing where, you know how the policy was, you know, when guys drive together, you know, try and stay up if you're the passenger for the driver. We had a few nights back to back, and I think Jeff had a couple long weeks at home with whatever was going on with him and his girlfriend and fiance at the time, who's now his wife. And we had three nights back to back, and it was one of those long loops where it was like a 300-mile drive every night. And I remember the first night, you know, Jeff fell asleep on me, and I was dozing off. I was like, "Come on, man, if you can, just try and get a good night's sleep tonight." And then I felt like once we got to the room, he was up and he was doing stuff. And the next night, we drove another 250 miles, and you know, midway through the trip, he slept. And he's like, "I'm sorry, I keep falling asleep, man, but you seem like you're doing good, man. You seem like you're up." And the third night, we were on the road. We were driving, and we were going through a very rural area, and there was a place where a transfer truck was put off on the side of the road. I don't know if it broke down, whatever, but the truck was just stopped and it was there. And all of a sudden, my wheels started turning. I pulled off and got in front of the transfer truck where it was directly in front of us. When you looked up through the windshield, all you could see is like Optimus Prime was sitting right in front of us, a big red transfer truck. And Jeff was sitting there sleeping and he was smiling like he was dreaming. And all of a sudden, I sat down on the horn and said, "Ah," and slammed on the horn, and he woke up and he saw the transfer truck, and he kicked it, he hit the door, he jumped out of it, and he almost had a complete heart attack just because I'd pulled him there. I said, "Well, okay, maybe this will keep you up for the rest of the trip now," because you know, when he woke up from that, all I saw was a transfer truck directly in front of him, that, you know, his life flashed in front of him.
Oh my gosh.
And then he got back in, he said, "I can't believe you did that." He said, "I'm gonna have to stay up now." He said, "I think I just peed my pants."
You got to keep an eye on the driver. That's the rule.
You got to keep an eye on the driver. You know what I mean?
Man, oh man. Well, hey, listen, Matt, we could talk for hours, but you've got a lot of things to do. You got Maryland Championship Wrestling to prepare for this coming weekend. Good luck with Christian York, although you're not going to need it.
I like the way you think.
That's right. And man, I'm really proud of you, and happy birthday, happy anniversary, and continued success, my friend.
Thank you very much, Kevin. I was just going to say, did you happen to see what my wife got me for my birthday, the bust?
No, I haven't seen it yet.
I'll have to make sure. I'll have to make sure you have a photo of it. But, yeah, it's something I've joked about forever, about having a statue. I said, you know, I said, like an iconic, yeah, I said, you know, an arrogant bastard like me, he's got to have his own statue. She actually got me a bust from an excellent sculptor, and it's the most amazing thing ever. Like, oh, my God, the vignettes I'm going to do with this thing down the road. I'm already excited about it. It immediately got my wheels turning. But, yeah, I've posted some pictures the last couple of days, and people are pretty excited about it. It's a pretty cool gift. And the first thing I said when I got it, I said, oh, my God, this is the perfect gift for a narcissistic person like me.
That's outstanding job by Rebbe, as always, man. That's indeed great. Good job. All right. Hey, listen, Matt, thanks again. Check out Matt, his brother Jeff. You know him as well. Team 3D and the Wolves, huge tag team matchup next week on Impact Wrestling, Full Metal Mayhem. And just follow Matt on Twitter at Matt Hardy Brand. Shop online for all things Matt Hardy at shopmatthardy.com. I got that right, didn't I?
And you did. And the official website, which goes along with shopmatthardy.com, is matthardybrand.com itself. And I'm pretty much all stops are at Matt Hardy Brand, whether it's Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, or Instagram. If you are looking for Matt Hardy, go to the Matt Hardy Brand.
You're the man, and I thank you for your time, and we will talk to you again soon. You got it. Hey, we're going to take a quick time out, and we'll continue with the Kevin Kelly Show. That was Matt Hardy. He was awesome. Stick around, more of the Kevin Kelly Show to come here on the Place to Be Nation.
But I never know when I'm going to have my next match, so I've got to stay in shape for that.
This is the king of old school, Steve Corino, and you've heard all the rumors, and it's true. The Steve Corino Show is here. We talk about wrestling, we talk about baseball, movies, television, anything you want to talk about. new guest every week. That's right, the Steve Corino Show every week here on the Place to Be Nation.
Hey, this is Bauer from The Bauer Show, sports and more. You can check out The Bauer Show podcast every Wednesday and Friday right here at placetobenation.com.
The Bauer Show.
Chad, do you hate it when commercials run and run?
What do you mean, Parv?
Oh, never mind.
Listen to Where the Big Boys Play on placetobenation.com and find us on iTunes. We are the only WCW Supercard exclusive podcast.
Greetings, friends. Ben Morse from Place to Be Nation's Main Event here. Tired of other podcasts constantly stuck in the past? Every other week, we give you a roundtable discussion of what's happening in wrestling today. Place to Be Nation's Main Event. We're holding everybody else down.
Looking for something different in your pro wrestling podcast? Look no further than the Pro Wrestling Super Show. Join me, Stephen Graham, every week as I'm joined by a rotating door of guests as we discuss a single topic each show, ranging from ECW pay-per-view reviews, wrestler snapshots, top six lists, and anything else you can think of. That's the Pro Wrestling Super Show every week here on the Place to Be Nation.
So you got the script, yeah? You all got it?
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds terrible. The Titans of Wrestling... Oh, brilliant.
Sorry.
The Titans of Wrestling are...
Pete, I'm a lead analyst for a show at Breakdown Matches.
Kelly, lead historian. I'm a jobber lover. Are you?
Johnny and I drink.
And yes, me, Bob. We watch old school wrestling and love it.
Titans of Wrestling.
You know you want to hear it.
Man, it's just, Matt Hardy to me is just so cool. And to hear him on the show and just to share that time with him, I'm really thankful. Again, just happy that he's happy and that he's doing so well. He's kicking ass, man. Hey, it's Kevin Kelly Show. We continue here. Kevin Kelly, my producer, Justin Rosero, and I usually get together about this time because this is kind of where we start to get into sort of, you know, the topic of the day, the news of the day. There's not a lot of newsworthy items right now. There just seems to be some opportunities, though, for growth with all the world of professional wrestling. Matt and I talked about that a little bit ago. But some questions about things in the, you know, in WWE with this past week's Raw. JR, what I don't know. What I feel like they kind of screwed up at Night of Champions with John Cena and Brock Lesnar.
So do you think they screwed up? Should they not have had the match, in your opinion, if they were going to do that finish? What would you have done for a finish?
I would have done the exact same thing that I saw at SummerSlam. Not with all the German suplexes, but Brock just destroys John Cena. Brock has to be a special killing machine, a once in a generation star. The Tiger Woods of professional wrestling, the whatever, the most dominant
without
champion
the Waffle House
ever.
Sex,
huh?
Is it Tiger Woods without the Waffle House sex?
Right, without the golf club in the back of the knee or the head or whatever his wife did to him. I think that they're too busy kowtowing and trying to satisfy the fact that John Cena is their top star. But I think everybody can be vulnerable, and I think that when you damage, when you take, yeah, but baby faces can be. And
I'm with
and,
you. No, I'm agreeing with you, except Brock. Everyone else
except
can be vulnerable.
For Brock. Except for him. Everybody else can be human. Everybody else can be vulnerable. He is the killing machine. And everybody has to go back to square one and retool their game and figure out how to do it and fight amongst themselves over the next 6 months to hone their skills, to get themselves ready, to be in position for that one chance, that one opportunity to maybe blow up Death Star like Luke Skywalker did. Just that one chance. I think everybody would relate to it. I think everybody would understand it, that Brock is in this next stratosphere and that we're hopeful of maybe bringing him back down to earth a little bit. Because if I get one chance, if I get one punch, if I get one opportunity, I think I can do it. And there isn't anything wrong with that. Well, that just elevates everybody.
So say they can reach a deal for the money, doesn't matter. They can reach a time. Brock is on board, blah, 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 blah. How long would you keep the belt on him? Don't worry about the financials. Don't worry about his contract, whatever. You can work that out without a problem. How long would you keep it on him?
I'd keep it on him through WrestleMania this year.
Yes.
To WrestleMania next year.
Boom.
Is that what you said?
Yep.
I think, again, he's the man who beat the Undertaker's streak.
Mm-hmm.
He slaughtered John Cena. And in the span of 3 weeks, came back to Earth. And had to have some kabuki finish to retain the belt but not beat Cena.
To me, that if you're going to have him run for that long with the belt, that could be the last time that shit happens. He needs to start picking up really good wins. I would have him come closest to losing at Mania, and I would have it be Daniel Bryan, but he retains. I would go to SummerSlam, and whoever you want to plug in there, you know, maybe Batista's farewell match, something like that. Close call again, and then go to Mania, and then if you want Roman Reigns to be your guy, that's when you do it. Not this Mania, because I don't think he's ready. You hold off, and you do it the year after. The wild card in this is Dean Ambrose. Guy is super over, mega over. Mega over, and makes you wonder if he pulls a Batista to Roman Reigns, Randy Orton. I guess that's the right analogy from 2005 when Orton was the guy pegged to take the belt at Mania, and Ambrose and Batista got over by force of nature. Will Ambrose pull the same?
There is a charm and a charisma about Ambrose, and it's in that similar vein with Daniel Bryan. Same, I think the same element that got Daniel Bryan over is what's getting Ambrose over now. It's self-generating momentum. It's just an appreciation for art in its most minimalistic form in professional wrestling. In a world of hype and glam and show business now, it's a back to basics approach for Ambrose. That's what worked for Daniel Bryan. That's what works for Ambrose. And I think both guys are very similar. I love the idea of Cena or of Daniel Bryan coming back WrestleMania and being destroyed by Brock Lesnar when the time is right. He gives him a run for his money, but he's destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
There is no shame in losing in spectacular fashion to Brock Lesnar.
Oh, no, none.
But regardless, they go to Raw this past week, and what? I only heard about it because, listen, the Blacklist is on, the Voice is on, I'm busy.
Dancing with the Stars.
See, I'm not a Dancing with the Stars fan. Is that a Carino must watch?
McGinn would know. I think it's on his list with Frozen and everything else.
Yes, it is. Yeah, it confirms. I know Total Divas and Dancing with the Stars.
I thought Total Divas was the name of his podcast, him and Dan.
Listen, Carino is coming back in a big way with the Steve Carino show. He has such a huge story for everybody. On the next episode, I can't wait for him to tell it.
Very good. So Raw,
what happened?
The word on the street is that the show was hastily rebooked, towards the end of the show
towards the end of the show or towards the end of the day?
Towards the end of the day, rather. Sorry. So right before the show was going to start. And, John Cena and Randy Orton were apparently, spoke up in their roles of locker room leaders and, voiced their displeasure with the quick rebooking. Not very happy about that episode. This week's seemed to fare a little bit better, so maybe they got things straightened out. But yes, they were not. The show was awful last week. It was brutal, and they've been on a really rough streak since SummerSlam. And so apparently they stepped up. They voiced their opinion that they can't do that kind of stuff. And I don't know where. I feel like they're so far down the rabbit hole with WWE that I don't know how they find their way out of it at this point. Like, they're so deep in their own shit. I don't know how they dig themselves out. And they were given a gift last winter with Daniel Bryan and that organic chemistry with the fans, that connection. And, it took some forcing, but they cashed in at Mania. And then since then, it's just been all downhill for various reasons.
I wrote about this. The idea of taking a 3-hour show, which to me is just too long. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to watch 3 hours, but I might watch an hour. And what if they made, in a 3-hour block of time, 3 separate 1-hour episodes? That was one of the original ideas for Raw, for Monday Night Raw, and Raw is War.
Right.
That they would be 2 separate but equal shows with a crossover segment. So you could somehow be coming back with, say, Stone Cold Steve Austin heading to the ring, and now it's JR and the King as the second announced team, and they're welcoming everybody to Raw's War, and it's the Texas Rattlesnake coming to the ring.
So same arena and everything, though?
Same arena.
I don't know.
And I'll tell you why it would work. It gives, for the current viewer, it doesn't change a thing. But when you're looking back, and is anybody going to watch these Raws when they are one day on the WWE Network?
Dan McGinn may.
You got to be a no-life loser to watch these things in retrospect, in their entirety. But an hour, if it's a theme, if it's a, you know, hey, this week on, and you give each hour kind of its own little brand. They're also equipped now to do subtle things with lighting that they used to not be able to do. Whereas they can treat the lighting a little bit differently with just some, you know, quick adjustments on the computer. Not to make dramatic changes, but to make subtle changes.
All right, let me ask you this, okay, before you go further down this path. Would any of these parlor tricks, these mind games, matter if the show was good?
No, we wouldn't be rebooking or talking about anything if the show was good.
Well, let's find out ways to make the show good. To me, this is not going to mask anything, making it three separate shows.
Well, it is good. We know what it takes. And that's what? To get Al Davis out of the front office. To get Daniel Snyder away from the... To get Jerry Jones out of the press box.
I mean, is that it? That's the fix, huh? Is that the only fix, you think?
I think so. Because I think once Vince is gone, I think a lot of changes will happen. The word that I understand is that if Vince dies, because he's never going to leave, Triple H takes over, and pretty much Kevin Dunn and that whole hierarchy is gone. It's gone. And Triple H will be able to put his own stamp on the brand. Right now it's Vince. Everything begins and ends. Everything ends with Vince. Once he's out of the picture, I think we can get some clarity. Who books NXT? Who's got the final say on NXT? Triple H does. That show kicks ass.
Would you be ever so, like? Would it surprise you at all if Triple H dies before Vince and we never even get there? Could you totally see that happening? Vince just outlives.
That's like Prince Charles. He never becomes king because the Queen Elizabeth lives to 136.
I mean, that's totally possible, right?
You know what? That thought had never entered my mind until just now, and I think that's kind of funny.
I mean, it's morbid, and I feel bad because it is. I don't harbor the ill will towards Triple H as some do. But
he would even laugh at that. He would say, "You know what? That old bastard."
Probably will.
But I just think again, it's time for a different direction. The Cowboys are going to be the Cowboys until Jerry Jones relinquishes control. There is not going to be any changes within the WWE until Vince relinquishes control. And it is just a parlor trick. It's a gimmick. It's a way to maybe, Vince, you don't have to worry about the first hour because it's separate. All 3 hours are separate. There's no crossover. So one writing team writes the 8 to 9, 9 to 10, and 10 to 11. Separate talent on all 3 hours. Maybe you stack John Cena in the 10 o'clock hour. You give the guys, here's who you're writing for this week. Here's what we did last week. And it's a very simple show. It's a match, a segment, a talking segment, and or another match, and then a main event. That's what you got. You got an hour to play with. Go. Make it great. I don't know. But until Vince leaves, Fart Central. What are you going to put inside the Hell in a Cell? We got to do this quickly. We don't have a lot of time. We got business. We got other business to do.
Well, there's different rumors. There's one that they could do a four-way with Cena, Orton, Ambrose, and Rollins. There's rumors that they may have a match between Cena and Ambrose on Raw where the winner gets Rollins and the loser gets Orton. So there's a different kind of rumors out there. I think I'd do that four-way. I think that'd be pretty fun. I think that's something fresh, something different. Obviously, money match, I think, is Ambrose Rollins one-on-one. But if they need Cena and Orton involved, then I say go four-way.
I think, again, that that can carry the water and can make up. They could do the spectacular spots that you don't. I don't want John Cena doing spectacular spots in a Hell in a Cell.
No, you let Rollins and Ambrose do them. Yeah.
I let them fall down. Yeah, I'm fine with that. I'm good with the four way. I don't want to see a girls match. I don't want to see, you know, I just so much of the talent. I just look at NXT and then I look at Raw, and I just go, why? What the hell?
I know. NXT is like the most loaded indie promotion right now.
But the action is amazing. If they took the same time and effort that they give to a Mark Henry and a Big Show so that they could cry, you know, oh, for God's sakes, it's awful. It is awful. Get them off my TV. I don't want to look at them. So, and Cesaro is so down. Oh, now he's up. No, he's down. No, up, down.
And now we're back in this little rehab Dolph Ziggler push again out of nowhere.
And to me, he's, you know, amazing, great talent, just needs a different, you know, but he's working with the fucking Miz, who I hate.
This thing with Sandow is not bad, though.
No, it's not. But see, Kevin Dunn thinks the Miz is the greatest ever.
You gotta like the Miz, Kevin. He was on MTV.
There you go. That's all you need to know. All right. So we'll talk more about this time for Hell in a Cell or who cares what.
Swerve, he was on VH1.
I know. I'm sorry. Dan McGinn chiming in. I did. I'm sorry. I dropped the F-bomb. I apologize. I apologize. I'm very, very sorry about that. We've got, do you want to talk about the business at hand? Do we do business or do we move on to trending stories? What do we do?
Let's talk a little business, and then we'll head over to trending topics.
Training stories, yes.
That's a new show on TLC. Trending topics. So these guys and girls are sponsored by LavaLovers.com, because if you want your room to look cool as shit, you head over there. Say you're a big San Francisco Giants fan. They're up 4-0 on the Pirates as we speak. You're hoping that they take home another World Series championship. You want to root on that team, you head over to LavaLovers.com, plug that in, and you search for your Giants lamps. You purchase that, and now you can celebrate in beautiful light, beautiful fashion, and your room will look cooler than ever.
What do you say there, Mikey? The San Francisco Giants, they're going to do it.
I don't know, dog. I don't know what Bruce Bochy's going to do. I don't know if he's going to keep Madison Bumgarner in there.
Ha! Mikey! San Francisco! They're going to do it!
So, anyway, your room to look cool as shit? LavaLovers.com is your spot. Also, sponsoring Trending Stories, Bonehead's Wing Bar on Washington Street in West Warwick, Rhode Island. Kevin Kelly will be there someday. Kev, I was there last night. Delicious as ever. Matt and the gang. Take care of you. My favorite waitress, Johanna. Hooked us up as always, and we had a great time. We'll be dining on Bonehead Wings Saturday night as well here at the studios.
Do they have a website?
They do.
Because I want to check it out. I want to send them a note. I want to send them a hello, and I'm sure they probably have some sort of social media presence.
Yes.
How do I connect with the folks at Boneheads?
Their website, boneheadwings.com. And Facebook.com, let me get the exact address here, /boneheadwings, as you would expect.
Okay. So boneheadwings.com, Facebook.com/boneheadwings.
And then @boneheadwings on Twitter as well.
Very good. So big shouts out to the folks at lavalovers.com and Boneheads Wings. Thank you guys for your support of the Kevin Kelly Show.
And now, the news the whole world is talking about. It's time for Trending Stories, right here on the Kevin Kelly Show.
Alrighty, are we ready for some trending stories?
This is, again, the opportunity. I wish Matt Hardy would have been here before for Trending Stories, because this is fun. This is always good. We sample a little bit of music, we sample a little bit of pop culture and life, and we find out really what's going on in the news, because this is where you find it out. Trending stories, usually there's three, sometimes there's more, and we always begin with trending story number one.
I drive really slow in the ultra-fast lane while people behind me are going insane. I'm gonna
Kevin, on Monday, Walmart, the home of assholes apparently, delivered its answer in a New Jersey federal court to 30 Rock actor Tracy Morgan's lawsuit arising from a 6-car accident on the New Jersey Turnpike. Among 9 affirmative defenses, Walmart says that injuries were caused in whole or in part by the plaintiff's failure to properly wear an appropriate available seatbelt restraint device. Morgan was among several people injured who are now suing Walmart. In particular, their lawsuit was filed in July, questions whether Walmart driver Kevin Roper was fatigued at the time of the crash. According to the suit, Roper had commuted 700 miles from his home in Georgia to the Walmart facility in Delaware before beginning his shift. Walmart knew or should have known that he had been awake for more than 24 consecutive hours ahead of the crash. You know, is this one, Kev, where Walmart's just going to just bite the bullet? I mean, are you going to win any kind of popularity at all with this thing? Like, what is the end game? To save a couple million for a multi-billion dollar company?
Yes, and that is exactly what it is. Why they didn't just quietly settle out of court, I have no idea. Walmart's excuse is akin to, you know, shooting a guy and then blaming that guy for bruising your bullets. It's just, it's ridiculous. In the old days, they used to hand out amphetamines to truck drivers. Mm-hmm. Apparently, Walmart needs to get on board. Back in the day, just have the amphetamines there for your truckers.
I'm sure they're cheap there. You know, everything's rolled back. Everything's on sale. You can buy some amphetamines, some speed.
Yeah, but New Jersey is really a crazy expensive state. So maybe he could have picked them up in Delaware, where I'm sure everything is less expensive. The taxes are much lower.
Oh, the Briscoes live there, right?
Well, sure. It's God's country, Sandy Fork. But I understand Tracy Morgan is in a bad way, physically, mentally.
Well, it sounds like his career might be done.
Yeah.
As a comedian, they said.
Are we talking any of the trending stories involving Tony Stewart, or is this our only car accident one?
We have a similar one, but we're not talking Tony S. Did you want to cover that for a minute?
I just real quick, because you know what intrigued me with Tony Stewart, who of course was involved with the accident on this the dirt track where Kevin Ward Jr. was killed, and the grand jury came back and decided not to press charges, manslaughter or whatever, against Tony Stewart. But one of the things that they found was that there was a level of marijuana in Kevin Ward Jr.'s body to where they would say he was impaired. So apparently dirt track racing is much like indie wrestling. and boy, did the Ward family I'm sure they were banking on the civil.
Oh, yeah. But
now, do you think they're going to get anything? Because wouldn't Tony Stewart's defense attorney say, brother was high as a kite when he got out of that car? You get nothing and like it. What do you think?
I think he murdered a guy with a race car. And he should just be lucky he's not going to jail.
He should be lucky, but he's, you know what? They're not going to want to pay out either, just like Walmart.
Well, he should, because he's not going to make himself look any better with this.
Agreed. Just quietly pay out the money and just avoid it. And
go away.
And just, yes, go away. Everybody needs to learn to say, I'm sorry, and accept blame, and stop saying, we got this wrong. I hate that saying nowadays. Mm-hmm. Oh, it drives me up a wall, the Michigan thing. Anyway, let's continue on, because I'm going off and doing my own trending stories. Trending story number one is where we begin. But next up on our journey is trending story number two.
Show me the way to the next whiskey bar.
Kevin, sad news for Amanda Bynes. The 28-year-old actress was arrested Sunday morning at 3 a.m. for DUI. The California Highway Patrol CHIPS confirms to E! News. She's been charged with a misdemeanor after police determined she was driving under the influence of controlled substance. The former Nickelodeon star was held in Van Nuys, California station on $15,000 bail before being released at 12:44 p.m. the following day. According to officials, Bynes was traveling westbound on Riverside Drive in Sherman Oaks. She ran into a red light. She stopped for a red light, but stopped in the middle of the intersection, was then pulled over and given the field sobriety tests. Things not good for Ms. Bynes. Back in February, she was on 3 years probation, stemming from her 2012 Dewey arrest. Also ordered to complete a 3-month alcohol education program, which clearly she failed. Any thoughts on Ms. Bynes and the other starlets running into trouble out there?
Well, you could give her an A for effort. I mean, she did stop just in the middle of the intersection.
Stop just a hair too late, sadly.
I didn't realize my nose was that far over the white line, officer. I had no idea of knowing. You know, she is the quintessential hot mess. They are writing her epitaph as we speak. She's probably going to be, you know, giving herself the finish on Skype videos for an extra payday pretty soon, like other former.
Well, see, that's okay.
You know, most downloaded celebrity in WWF history.
We'll take that.
What?
We'll take that.
No, you don't want that. But I don't know. It's sad because I when
what's your favorite Amanda Bynes movie?
The one where her dad married the was the English guy.
Yeah. Which one's that? I bet McGinn knows. I think they talk about this on Carino. The Amanda Bynes.
I can't remember. But see, when my oldest was young, the Amanda show on Nick was a mainstay. I loved that show.
Was that the one Jenny Garth, or was that a different one?
Was a different one. That was after she left Nickelodeon, then did the thing on whatever that was, CW.
Pretty high, hotness quotient on that one, Jenny Garth.
Yeah.
And Amanda Bynes.
But just a silly, you know, a variety show, a Nickelodeon kids show.
Yeah.
And, you know, going through the painful tween years, and it was cute. I don't know. It's sad. It's very sad because it's kind of like a part of my son's childhood that now I see, and she's this hot mess, getting in trouble and probably dying one day. And it's be like, oh, that's sad. Thanks for bringing the show down.
Maybe DDP will get a hold of her.
This is the week, though, for Deweys and for celebrities. I don't know if you talk about this in trending story number three. Is there more?
There are more, but there's no more Deweys. So do you want to talk about
that? What about Michael Phelps?
Yeah, I mean, he's ready to go to the NFL, I think.
He has a resume for it, doesn't he?
Yes, he certainly does.
Two DUIs, and he gets on Twitter and says, I'm sorry. And even Ryan Lochte, his American swimming counterpart, was like, ah, this guy's an idiot. He just makes bad decisions.
This guy's dumb.
He dumb. Well, whatever it is, just keep your name out of the police blotter, please.
Who cares about Phelps anyway? He's done, right? I mean, is he too old now to swim? Is he going to be out?
He had retired after the last Olympics and then started to get itchy again because apparently he has no life other than smoking weed and swimming. And so he decided he was going to make a comeback and try it. And there was a meet that he swam in. He didn't do so hot. I don't know whether or not he was swimming,
huh? Good for you.
I'm a sports fan. I know what's going on. When you have insomnia like I do, you get up, you watch SportsCenter. It's kind of on a loop, you know?
Yeah.
But anyway, so yeah, Michael Phelps is another train wreck and just an idiot. And I don't like it. I don't like it at all, Jerry. All right. So let's move on because there's more. There's got to be more trending stories. This would be the third. Hopefully there's more. But this is trending story number three.
For our next story, Kev, we head up to Anchorage, Alaska, where Pacific walrus that can't find sea ice for resting in Arctic waters are coming ashore in record numbers on a beach in northwest Alaska. An estimated 35,000 walrus were photographed Saturday 5 miles north of Point Lay, according to the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. Point Lay is an Inupiat Eskimo village 300 miles southwest of Barrow. The enormous gathering is spotted during the NOAA's annual Arctic Marine Mammal Aerial Survey, conducted overseas offshore lease sale. So, Andrea Medeiros, spokesperson, said 50 carcasses on the beach from animals that may have been killed in a stampede. The agency would assemble a necropsy team to determine the cause of death. So, what's going on here, Kevin? Why are these walruses taking up refuge here in Anchorage? And I have a second question after that one.
Well, first of all, if I'm ever, you know, if I ever come back in another life, I would like to be a part of the walrus necropolis?
Necropolis.
What is that?
Necropsy team.
I would like to be.
I thought you were setting me
team.
Up for a layup walrus joke, but I'm not going to say it.
No. There's always a dumb animal somewhere. Sea
there's
turtles.
35,000 of them.
Well, sea turtles come up on the beach. Whales and sharks beach themselves all the time. They're stupid. They're dumb animals. That's the reason why we have the saying, dumb animal.
Well, it sounds like, too, they're getting screwed by the water and stampedes. Stampedes can be triggered by polar bear, human hunter, or low-flying airplanes. The carcasses of the 130, mostly young walrus, were counted after a stampede in September 2009. The WWF, World Wildlife Fund, said walrus have also been gathering large groups on the Russian side of the Chukchi Sea. So, anyway, walruses aside, this picture is pretty crazy to look at. What have you ever been to Alaska, Kevin? That was my next question.
No, I have not. I've been to 41 of the 50 states.
All right, name me the 9 you have not been to.
North Korea? No, I got to have a map in front of me. Montana. Idaho,
Utah,
Utah, Oregon,
Alaska.
Alaska, Hawaii. That's six. North Dakota, seven.
Maine. Have you been to Maine?
Into Maine. All of that loop. At one time there was 41. It may be, no, that's it. Eight. It may be 42. Oh yeah, New Mexico. I added New Mexico on the list when I did Lucha Libre USA. So there's my eight. There you go. So that's the eight states that I haven't been to. In fact, I went to West Virginia last weekend, and it was a beautiful drive. It was awesome. I love traveling. Traveling is great.
So you ever going to make it to Alaska? There's going to be some indie out there, right? Is there any indie promotion out there?
Oh, yeah. I've seen tapes from, and there was a cat that was on the last, Luke, who was on the last season of Tough Enough.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
He was decent. He was wrestling some local dude up there who sent the footage of the match. And I was like, hey, you're kind of rotten, but that dude you worked with is okay. And it was like, I'm reading the, oh, that's why he was the Tough Enough guy. I'm like, oh, got it. And how the hell did he wind up there? Some of these tours that these wrestlers go on, like on the ice, ice road trucker type of thing, like they'll drive way up north. I don't know if they go up as far as the Walruses, but they drive across ice and snow. By the way, our former guest, Ashley Six.
Yes.
Check this out. So he comes on the Kevin Kelly Show back a few episodes ago. And as we talked about earlier, you can listen to all the archives. This guy is a cancer survivor. He's really cool. Was on the cusp of doing something with Ring of Honor. Got sick. Got cancer. Kicked out. Came back. Amazing. He's going to be in the next top prospect tournament for Ring of Honor.
Oh, nice. Good for him.
How about that? I don't know when it's going to be yet.
Well, usually January, right?
Usually. And I have to look at what the taping schedule is this year and where we're going to do it logistically. But the next time that we do the Top Prospect Tournament, Ashley Six is going to be in it.
Very good.
Yeah, I'm very happy for him. So we've got games. We've got more sports talk. We've got a lot more to do.
We got another trending story, Kevin.
What? There's more? I thought we were done.
We got a fourth, sir.
Oh, this is like Christmas and Rosh Hashanah all rolled into one. Mm-hmm. All right.
And Flag Day.
Number four, your bonus trending story right now. Here we go.
Big news, Kevin, came out on Tuesday. The FCC dumped the sports blackout rule, dealing a blow to the NFL at the time of growing scrutiny for the league in Washington. In a unanimous 5-0 vote, the commission eliminated the decades-old regulation, which prevented cable and satellite TV from airing games that were blacked out locally when the team fails to sell enough tickets to fill its stadium. NFL defended the rule as a tool to ensure robust attendance, but a growing number of regulators and lawmakers says it unfairly punished football fans. So, couple questions here, Kev. Let's start with one. What do you think of this news?
Number one, I think bureaucrats should never make any decisions about sports. The dirtbag tool that is in charge of this SEC commission also said that, and we should look into this whole Redskins thing because the Washington football team's football name is very offensive.
Yeah, they so want to start fining media outlets that call them Redskins now or something like that.
Yeah, they can suck it. What's the next question about this?
What other antiquated laws or rules would you like to see turned over at this point?
You know, there's some blue laws on the books in every state where it's, you know, illegal to have sex with a parakeet on a Sunday. There's all kinds of dope things like that.
I know there's some sodomy with dogs that you'd like to see overturned. But what are some more realistic ones?
I'm writing my congressman as we speak to overturn this legislation.
Yes.
I think that the
something
idea
with Dave Sherrod too with that one.
The drinking age of 21, I think is ridiculous.
So you'd bring it down 15?
I would eliminate it.
Oh, so no drinking age. You can get buzzed or hammered whenever you want.
If that's what you want to do, then go right ahead. Of course, but there would be felony life conviction if you ever get a DUI. There needs to be punishment. There needs to be, the kid for Ohio State that ran on the field.
Mm. Got the rock bottom.
He got the rock bottom. He also got his scholarship pulled.
Yeah.
You think any yahoo is going to be jumping out of the stands at Ohio State or any other school? I don't think so.
Well, probably because they're a bunch of drunken frat boys. So there's still a good chance that happens.
But a sober-minded individual might not think so. But anyway, I think that again, Amanda Bynes at 3 in the morning, you get what you pay for. I think, again, if they get rid of the drinking age, but then at the same time make the penalties harsher, it'll eliminate it. I don't know. There's a lot of laws that are stupid. What do you think?
I think one should be that they split up three-hour shows into 3 one-hour blocks. I think that'd be something the FCC should look into.
See? Now, again, who's going to watch 3 hours? But 1 hour? I'll watch it.
That'll
exactly.
Solve lots of problems. I don't know. I feel like there should be something in place when you get older with driving. Like, I feel like, so that's not a law you'd repeal, but maybe one you add. So, like, every year after age 72 or something like that, you have to go get tested. And that's extra revenue, right? Extra jobs at the DMVs, extra state revenue in place. And maybe like a $20 test or something like that you have to pass. And you have to really pass it, not a bullshit fake pass. You got to really prove that you still should be fit to be driving on the road. So maybe 72 is a little bit young nowadays. Like 20 years ago, 72 might have worked. But maybe like 80. When you get
bring
to
up
80.
Some of that, bring it, pot up some of that NFL music in the background.
Okay. You want to take a minute here? We'll talk some NFL real quick, like 2 minutes.
Let's do it real quick.
All right, surprise team.
Surprise team is New England and how bad they suck.
Woo, it's been so fun around here.
I just can't believe they were my Super Bowl pick.
Yeah, none of our Super Bowl picks are doing well. I picked the Saints, and they're in there's some deep doo-doo as well.
They're in definitely Barney Rubble there. I picked Philly and New England.
Mm.
And, like, even Dan Patrick picked New England. There's a lot of people that thought New England was going to be very good this year, but they are a holy train wreck. Monday night was awful.
So much
awful.
Fun. Around, I mean, they're just imploding, like, on sports radio around here and everything. It's getting ugly fast. And now you have all the barbs out there with, you know, Brady's pissed with management, apparently. I don't know if you heard before the game, Trent Dilfer on NFL Countdown just went off on Patriots management, and many think that Brady kind of fed him some information. To speak on his behalf. And then Steve Young after the game did the same thing. And then in Brady's press conference today, he was talking about the Bengals, and he kind of took some digs. He's like, yeah, well, they're an impressive team. You know, they have 6 first round picks and they draft high, you know, kind of like we do every year. And, you know, they have a lot of great talent, and we all have the same amount of money to spend. So kind of like,
ouch.
Yeah. You know, the first time you really hear that from Brady. So, Ben Volen of one of the Boston papers up here is on the radio today, and he thinks that Brady will not finish his career in New England. He thinks he's going to go the way of Montana, the way of Manning, the way of Favre, and that he'll wrap up somewhere else. He thinks he's done.
I think,
like, in the next
and
year.
Getting pulled for Janine Garofalo last Monday had to be quite shocking to him. But I'm also surprised at the New York Giants and how they apparently have turned things around. Mm. I thought they were like a 4 or 5 win team tops. But they look pretty good the last couple.
Yeah,
and
definitely.
It seems like they've righted the ship. I'm not surprised with how good Seattle is. San Francisco, if they didn't win last Sunday, I think that would have been adios to the season. That may be a season-saving win. Who knows? I think something's wrong with Nick Foles. I think he's hurt because I think he got rocked in that Washington game. Then he got rocked a couple times in San Francisco. And I'm telling you, he's just not right.
What's up with Shady? He's not running well either.
He's definitely not right. And that's a big story here in PA because everybody's speculating on what's wrong with him. And they're not. He's not talking. Nobody's talking about it. But there's definitely some shady business going on.
All right.
With
revised
them Philadelphia Eagles.
We're 1/4 of the way through the season. Quick. Revised Super Bowl pick.
Revised Super Bowl pick. I've got to go with Seattle. In the AFC, I got to go with, oh my God. There's really San Diego?
The Cincinnati Bengals.
They suck.
Andy Dalton, I don't trust him. I want to pick them. Their D is really good. Great running game. I just don't trust that ginger bastard. I'll take your Chargers. I like them too. I think Rivers has really turned the corner officially now with the new coach down there, and he's had a great last 2 years. I like Keenan Allen. They're going to get Ryan Matthews back in a couple weeks. I don't know. We'll have to see how their defense holds up against a really elite offensive team, though. They haven't played Denver yet, so we'll see how that goes. They have the offensive juggernaut Jets this week. So,
oh, God, what a putrid team. An absolutely putrid, putrid team organization.
Not even
they
close.
They can't draft.
They have a lot of great young talent on defense. What do you mean?
They had – what did they do this year? They stockpiled all those picks, and who? What? Who?
Well, nobody. Calvin Pryor, good pick.
Aside from him, what they have, like 15 picks.
Let's take a break.
All right, break time. Now that we start picking on the Jets, We're going to play some games. We're going to talk more sports. We'll give Major League Baseball playoff picks and more. Maybe even some wrestling talk as well.
Oh, yeah.
Kevin Kelly. What?
I said, oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, that too. Kevin Kelly Show rolls on here on the Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com.
What's going on? This is the Godfather, Nate Milton, with an offer you cannot refuse. Each and every week, you can join Marcus Vandenberg, Big Nasty Alfred Kunawa, and myself on the Kings of Sport podcast, available exclusively on PlaceToBeNation.com, your one-stop spot for the best in sports and pop culture.
Hey, sports fans, this is Dr. G for Extra Point, Place to Be Nation's traditional sports talk podcast. Every episode, Scott Criscullo and I talk everything from the Big Four leagues to all the hot sports news with exclusive guests and analysts. Email us your comments and questions at extrapoint@placetobenation.com. That's the Extra Point, exclusively on placetobenation.com.
Hey, sports fans, Cowboy here. Make sure you make your weekly stop by the Sports Lounge here on placetobenation.com, where the boys and I tackle all the hot topics in the world of sports. We go behind the numbers and provide in-depth expert analysis on Major League Baseball, MMA, NFL, and more. The seats fill up quick, so grab your favorite cigar, kick back, and join us in the Sports Lounge, only on PlaceToBeNation.com.
In Rhode Island, and looking for great food and a fun atmosphere, we'll be sure to stop by Bonehead's Wing Bar, 131 Washington Street in West Warwick, with over 65 different wing sauces and dozens of sandwiches, burgers, and appetizers. In a fully stocked bar, Bonehead's has something for everyone. Boneheads also shows every WWE and UFC pay-per-view, features live music, weekly trivia, and much, much more. So, be sure to stop in, tell Matt and the crew that Place to Be Nation sent you, and become a Bonehead today.
Hey, this is Rob Naylor. Do you still enjoy pro wrestling? Believe it or not, I still do. So you better join myself and Will on the Google Wrestling Podcast exclusively at PlaceToBeNation.com.
Shit, I wasn't ready. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening and shit. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening to guys talk about old school wrestling, follow me and Charles on Wrestling with the Past podcast on Place to Be Nation.
On Richard and the Mailman, we talk about life with great enthusiasm, which eventually leads to disillusionment and inevitably hopelessness. But don't worry, there's lots of laughs along the way. So check us out every week or month or whatever on Richer and the Mailman.
What's up, wrestling fans? This is Jeff Peck, and you can check out my wrestling podcast, The Still Real to Us Show, every Saturday right here at PlaceToBeNation.com. It is a wrestling podcast from a fan's perspective, and we're not doing it in our mom's basement. So check it out every Saturday right here at PlaceToBeNation.com.
It's still real to me, damn it!
Looking for new wrestling, sports, and pop culture voices? Head over to PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. We have an extremely talented staff that covers comics, video games, and all facets of entertainment. Our sports coverage spans all the major professional and collegiate sports, including MMA. Our fresh takes on professional wrestling are some of the best on the internet. Also, be sure to check out our friends at thehistoryofwwe.com, prowrestlingonly.com, Scott Keith blog at rspwfaq.net, and piledriverwrestling.net.
Been waiting all this time, so this certain is my one crime. Take a step, which way to go, with no permission from a hoe. And I live with no disease, my backseat's got remedies. I'll be part of history.
Back for more on the Kevin Kelly Show here on the Place to Be Nation, PlaceToBeNation.com. Matt Hardy was our guest earlier on, and all the archived episodes are available for you as well. Episode 19 here of the Kevin Kelly Show has been a lot of fun. Matt shared a road story before, a great one about ribbing his brother Jeff. I'll have a road story of my own a little bit later on as we wrap up this edition of the Kevin Kelly Show. But we usually do other things besides just wrestling. And sometimes we play games, we talk about sports, and in this segment, we're going to do both. We're going to play a game, and then we're going to talk some Major League Baseball playoffs, and maybe even some wrestling talk, but who knows. So the game this week is called This or That. So let's do
time
it now.
Time to play the game!
Yes.
All right. Kevin, we have an overall premise to This or That this week.
Now, of course, the basic game is you have the choice of this or that.
you can get with either. So we've done this before in different incarnations of the game. And tonight you're going to continue to build your own wrestling promotion.
Ooh, good.
It consists of all-time guys. So I'm going to give you different categories of things, and I'm going to give you two choices.
All right.
You're picking the guy at his peak. That's what you're getting.
Okay. I got my pen. I'm ready.
All right. First up, I want you to pick your selling top face. So your top baby face that works from underneath is a great seller and can get the crowd riled up, make a hot comeback.
That would be
Sting or Randy Savage? I'm talking like early 90s Sting, like all the stuff of Vader, like
prime
Sting. Versus like what, 92-ish Savage, I guess, 88 Savage, whatever your choice that period.
I'm going to go with Sting. Both are great. Savage is probably better, but I just was such a fan of Sting's. I just loved what he did. I'm going to go with Sting, and it's selfish because it's me building my own.
Okay, that's fine. I would take Savage in this one.
Yeah.
But Savage is like my all-time favorite. So, all right, dominant heel, Vader or Andre the Giant?
Ooh, Andre is an attraction.
Okay, Andre's... let's mix it up. I'll throw another guy in here. We'll use Andre in a minute, okay?
Okay.
Let's do dominant heel, Vader or Brock Lesnar?
Vader, I just never had any faith in. He was a bully and was mean. And he had a very short run as a dominant heel and was beaten by Paul Orndorff, who had had basically one arm and was in flip-flops. I'm going to go with Brock Lesnar.
That'd be a hell of a match. 1992 Sting against modern-day Brock.
Man, it's a license to print money. You got it right there.
All right, so
that's at the top of any card. In fact, who knows? They might do it at Mania this year.
It's possible. All right, so let's bring Andre back here. Let's go with attraction. Andre the Giant or like Undertaker from the last like 5 years or so, where he's still very good in the ring but very sporadic competitor.
There was something different or just so unique about Andre in his prime.
I think there's one moment that illustrates that. Him riding in that cart at WrestleMania 3 with Bobby is like the one time you get like the feel of the size and importance of him. You know what I mean? Like that's such a heavy moment when he's riding out in that cart and he gets in the ring, stands next to Hogan. Like that to me, that's like the iconic Andre, like what he was.
And my introduction to Andre, late 70s, early 80s, Georgia, Florida, he'd come in and it would always be special. So I'm going to go with, but gosh, there's just something special. To me, The Undertaker, if I'm picking attractions and you're having me solidify Taker in his last 5 years, I've got to go with Andre because Andre was an attraction in his prime, and that's where I got to go with. So I'm going to go with Andre the Giant.
I mean, I guess Taker kind of was, but I feel like pre like 07-ish, he was still too regular on the roster.
Yeah, but the last, if really, like it's a one and done type of thing.
Well, you can use him twice a year or something. So kind of like Taker was the last few years.
But all right, now are you going to ask me who his opponent is?
You can pick someone from the roster, or
or am I doing, because that depends. It depends on what and how. Andre's thing could be a tag, but he was always, you knew what you were getting. That's a really tough one. I'm spending too much time on this.
It's okay.
I love Taker. Absolutely love Taker. But to me, when he was, American Badass, and before that, he was just, there was something special. And in the last few years, it just hurt me to watch him wrestle. Andre, it hurt me to watch him wrestle when it hurt, when he was in the last couple of years, just like Taker. All right. Andre. Andre it is.
Okay. All right, we're up in the ante now. Speaking of ante, we're going with anti-hero, your top anti-hero, CM Punk or Steve Austin?
Oh, CM Punk. No, I'm sorry. What am I talking about? Steve Austin.
Okay.
Steve Austin is, he's the reason why CM Punk could be an anti-hero. Mm-hmm. He's the greatest anti-hero in professional wrestling. There's nobody ever that has done what he did.
All right, let me throw this one at you. CM Punk or Roddy Piper?
Hmm. Piper was a much better heel than a babyface. So in this case, I would go CM Punk.
Okay.
Piper was at his best, in my opinion, when he was the foil. He had his moments when he was that rebel that, you know, did whatever he wanted to do. Chew gum and kick ass and being all out of gum. But CM Punk was better in that role, I think, than Piper.
All right. Let's go now to Athletic Big Man. The Big Boss Man or Bam Bam Bigelow?
That's a really good one. That is a really good one. Both so underrated for athleticism. Bam Bam Bigelow kind of set the standard, though, for being that breed of cat, that type of athlete. Things he could do, Boss Man could not do. So I have to go with Bam Bam Bigelow, one of the most underrated guys of all time. Truly amazing. Bam Bam. It is.
All right. Putting together a good roster so far.
Yeah.
All right. Let's get out of the ring for a minute. You got to book these guys. Who's your booker? Oh. Paul Heyman or James E. Cornette?
It's another good one. I've got to go with Cornette.
Really?
I have to go with Cornette because, but see, Cornette's awesome and amazing. I got to go with Cornette. I have to go with Cornette just because I think there's a lot of things that get glossed over about Paul Heyman now, and what he's doing currently is you know, really, really great stuff. But the dude was a habitual liar. Just an absolute lying piece of garbage. He lied to the boys. He lied about everything. I don't know how he kept all of his lies straight. Cornette was pretty much a straight shooter. Complete hothead. You worry about him. But as far as booking acumen, I don't think anybody has that historical reference like Cornette does to be able to tell you why he thinks things are going to work. Now, in the era, I don't know. Today's crowd, it might be better to go with Heyman. But I would say overall, I'd go with Cornette.
Okay.
Because I just can't trust Paul Heyman.
All right, let's go back to the ring. We're going to run a tag teams here. We're going to start with our ace tag team, the leaders of our division.
Okay.
The Hart Foundation, the Midnight Express.
Midnight Express. I was hoping you were going to say somebody else besides the Hart Foundation. I thought the Hart Foundation was tremendously overrated.
Mm.
Overrated.
All right. Well,
Brett
so
was good.
Who would you put up with the Midnights then? Is there another team that you would consider?
As far as a heel?
No, just your top team.
If I have the opportunity to go back in time and book a tag team match, I'm putting the Midnight Express against the Rock and Roll Express in the ring. I go back to 1985, 1986. I put the Rock and Roll Express versus the Midnight Express in the ring.
Oh, well, that sets up our next one. So let's do our high-flying tag team, the Rock and Roll Express or the Rockers.
The Rock and Roll Express were not high flyers. They were master psychologists, and they sold. That's how they made their money. So Sean and Marty, again, for the time, fast-paced, energetic. What they lacked in charisma in comparison to the Rock and Rolls, they made up for with that athleticism, no doubt about it. But the Rockers are the better athletes to the Rock and Rolls. But Ricky and Robert, are you kidding me? They're one of the five most influential tag teams of all time. Rockers are not on that list.
All right.
No, well, who's in your top five? Who are the five most influential tag teams in wrestling history?
Sure. Well, let me do this last tag team one, then we'll talk about
Okay.
So your power tag team, the Steiners or the Legion of Doom / Road Warriors?
Boy. There was just something special when the music hit. And I'm talking about NWA Road Warriors coming out to Iron Man. That's it right there. They were a spectacle. They were an absolute spectacle. Steiners, truly amazing. The next generation, the athleticism that Hawk and Animal did not have, but they never had the charisma and just the awing presence of the Rock and Roll Express.
All right, so top five most influential. I mean, you got to put the Road Warriors.
One.
I don't know. I got to think about this more. I guess you put the Midnights.
Okay.
I mean, I get your point with the Rock and Roll Express, but I feel like the Rockers more inspired the generation to come. If that makes sense. Like, I feel like the Rock and Rolls were great in that generation, but I feel like that whole group of guys that came up, kind of, to me, like, maybe one of the last groups that grew up diehard wrestling fans, like that, all the guys that came up in the 90s and early 2000s, Punk Brian, Edge, Christian, you know, all those guys that grew up diehard wrestling fans that got into the business, I feel like they would pick the Rockers. Am I off on that?
Only because I know from wrestling training schools, they never talk about how that, you know, that one thing that they always stress is that Ricky Morton always rolled in to make the hot tag. There isn't anything that Sean and Marty did as the Rockers that is truly influential. Okay. But I'll give you my list and you tell me what you think. You mentioned the Road Warriors and you are correct. The Fabulous Freebirds.
Yeah. Okay. That's a good one.
Rock and roll music was introduced through the Freebirds, and that became part and parcel with that. The rock.
Now, the original Freebirds, not Jimmy Garvin. No. 1991.
The original Rock and Roll Express, the three-man team of Michael P.S. Hayes, Terry Bam Bam Gordy, and Buddy Roberts. The Rock and Roll Express, as I mentioned, the greatest babyface tag team in the modern generation. Next to... you can't have the Rock and Rolls without the Midnight Express, what they were able to do with the combination of athleticism and tag team continuity. They set the standard. They really just took tag team wrestling to the next level and were very influential in that. Many tag teams patterned themselves after either the Rock and Roll Express or the Midnight Express. And then the fifth team, one of the men on that team was our guest earlier tonight, and that's the Hardy Boys. For their influence in their offensive attack, their style, their attire, what they did, the way they made everything that they did cool. We talked about how they were so influential to the industry as a whole. You could see Hardy Boy type matches every weekend at any independent show with guys in. Again, what they didn't have was what made Matt and Jeff special, but anybody thought they could be a tag team, they went out and dressed like Matt and Jeff. That's influence. So those are my top five most influential tag teams.
The lack of Twin Towers worries me, but
and I understand why. You know, you and your buddies, you were fighting over, you know, who was going to be the other half of the Twin Towers when you guys would wrestle. I understand. I'm the same way. So that's my top five. And all right. The Tully and Arn, of course, could be on that list too. Or the Anderson brothers, as far as being able to pick a body part. But that was sort of the style of Mid-Atlantic back in the day. So you look back in the Jim Crockett Promotions, that was how they wrestled. And everybody talks about, like, well, you just grabbed an arm, they wore the arm down. Look at what go back and find the Briscoe brothers versus Steamboat and Youngblood. You'll see how Steamboat and Youngblood won the match over the heel Briscoe brothers. It was just, you know, that's Jack and Jerry. You know, it was just a different match from a different time. You'd never see a match like that today. But anyway, I love tag team wrestling, just like Matt.
Okay. All right. A few more here. You need a guy to put other stars over. So who's your kind of known jobber to the stars? You got Coco Beware, Kofi Kingston.
Kofi Kingston.
Yeah, that's kind of what he is now, right? Modern day.
I was thinking, you know, SD Jones.
No, those are jobbers. I mean, he's
Johnny Rods.
Come on. Coco is the man.
Barry Horowitz. Oh,
no, those
gosh.
Are jobbers. Those were name jobbers. Jobber to the Star is a guy who won a bunch of matches, was on pay-per-view, different stuff like that, but when he pushed came to shove, he was putting guys over. He was a guy that teamed with the jobber against the Estat. Like, you get a match, Power and Glory versus Coco Beware and, like, you know, whatever, Brady Boone or Chris Duffy, you know?
Yeah.
You get the bum, and you get, like, the name guy versus the real tag team.
I so have to go with Coco in that spot, then. Kofi is... He's on the wheel. It's a different era, you know. But he's a good jobber as far as putting guys over. But there was always just something great about having Coco out there. And you always had hope with Coco. I don't think anybody has hope that Kofi Kingston's ever going to win a match of significance. But, you know, listen, if Coco Beware was fighting Ted DiBiase for the $1 million belt, people believe that Coco could win.
True.
Here's something funny. So we were in Wheeling last week, and off to the distance, we saw a bald-headed African-American gentleman moving a table on the arena floor, and it didn't look like he was part of our crew. For a second, we looked, and we were a good bit away. We said, oh, God, is that Virgil?
Selling merch!
Thought Virgil was setting up his own gimmick table on the arena floor. Thankfully, it wasn't. It was... just one of the local arena personnel, and he was actually part of a car dealership, and they were supposed to be having cars on the arena floor. But anyway, there was a near Virgil sighting this past Saturday in Wheeling.
VIRGIL. All right, your intercontinental level star, and we're both going two old school choices here: Tito Santana or Mr. Perfect.
Wow, Mr. Perfect should have been world champion. He was that good. Tito Santana.
And I'm talking legit Tito. I'm talking like 84, 85, 86
yeah.
Tito.
Tito was badass a... Tito. I don't ever remember the day of badass Tito. I know who you're going to pick, so I'm going to pick Kurt Hennig.
Now, push came to shove, I'd pick Hennig too. He's one of my favorites. Yeah. I mean, but Tito, like 84 to like 87, I mean, just was awesome. Like, I feel like he's very overlooked and underrated historically. Like, he's had some wars with Greg Valentine. Even the matches with Perfect. That match, you know, 1990 wasn't a fantastic in-ring year for, like, the WWF. Their match on Saturday Night's Main Events, the IC title tournament rematch, was just phenomenal. Tito and Perfect. Like, it's an unreal, like, 11-minute sprint WWF match that you don't get to usually see during that time period.
I remember that match. It was very good. And if I remember correctly, Tito dropped the belt because... good finish. I've never seen that anywhere else. He's going for the atomic drop on Savage, and Savage has something in his hand, and he punches him in the head.
Yep, falls on top. I think he was going falls for a back on, suplex. He was suplexing
yeah,
ba-
or a back
ring.
Suplex yep. or an atomic drop. Boom with the gimmick cover, 1, 2, 3.
And that set up the whole Danny Davis turn a year later. So
exactly.
Good stuff.
So Perfect is the Intercontinental Champion.
All right, we got four tough ones coming down the stretch here. Let's get your broadcaster out of the way.
Okay.
We have Jim Ross or Gorilla Monsoon.
Jim Ross.
Anyone you would pick over him?
Gordon Sully.
You gonna have Sully calling this stuff?
I don't know.
Come on.
No, there's too many modern era athletes.
And Brock Lesnar hits his 19th Sioux play.
You got to go with Jim Ross. Jim Ross is the most complete, well-rounded. Put it this way. Jim Ross is the most complete, well-rounded announcer in the past 50 years of broadcasting.
Hey, you know me.
He could do any era at any time over the past 50 years, and he could make it work. Solely couldn't call today's wrestling.
You know me. I got at least put one vote in for Vince.
You love Vince McMahon behind the
so
microphone.
Good on the commentary. I loved him. My favorite. All right, three more.
Yeah.
Your sneaky cheating heel. Your guy who would get
Mr.
help.
Mr. Fuji.
No, Fuji's the worst. I'm talking like legit. Guys that would, you know, sometimes get help or they'd bail by DQ and win. And a guy that always looking for the easy way out but could go in the ring if he needed to. So we're talking Ric Flair, obviously, right? Set the mold. And then we're talking Ted DiBiase.
Wow. DiBiase was a Flair ripoff. The Million Dollar Man was the love. If Ric Flair and Vince McMahon had a love child, it would have been the Million Dollar Man.
They may, right? I mean, I don't want to rule that out. That's possible.
Maybe that
someone's
was in
out
the pictures.
There. Charlotte?
That was in the pictures with Elizabeth.
Oh, okay.
So obviously it's got to be Flair. To me, the guy that's always underrated on that list, and he's not on any other list for any other reason other than being tremendously overrated, but as far as like sneaky heel, do what it takes to win type of guy, Larry Zbysko.
Mm.
Doesn't get enough love in that category. Any other category, you don't even mention his name. That's it. So that was who I was thinking of when you said sneaky, jumping out of the ring. That and Mr. Fuji, because he's Japanese. Anyway, what?
Okay. Two more. Fuji's the worst. All right, your workhorse, in-ring workhorse, and you know I got to pin this one on you. Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels.
Ooh, Bret Hart was a workhorse. He was a technician. Shawn, the show-stopping, show-stealer, blah, blah, blah. But Bret could pull, and Shawn could too, but Bret could pull great matches out of anybody. I give Bret the nod in that regard. He's a better technician, he's a better mechanic than Shawn Michaels is. Absolutely.
All right, and our final one. Your megastar, the guy you're going to have on top. And since we kind of bumped him out of his one before, we're going to go three-way here. Steve Austin, Hulk Hogan, The Rock.
I was around for, of course, the heyday of Austin and Rock. I was not in the buildings for what Hogan got. Hogan's 84 to 88 time, especially 85, 86, 87, at least until Mania. Remarkable. Amazing. I can't compare it to what Austin and Rock went through. One megastar that you give everything to, it to me, is it Rock or is it Austin? And I go back and forth on this because I've thought about this. Who's the bigger star, Stone Cold or The Rock? Stone Cold or Rock? Who's the bigger star? Who's the better, the number one guy? I go back and forth on this, and I think of now, today, I give it to The Rock. Ask me the same question in 6 episodes, JR, I might tell you Stone Cold. But I put the two of them just slightly above Hogan.
Interesting. I mean, I think if you're talking in their prime, I think Austin was the bigger draw.
I'm thinking the whole package.
All right, let's put it this way. Switch The Rock and Austin.
Okay.
Their ascension. Is the same stuff happen? So Rock comes first.
No.
Right. I think that's your answer. I mean, to me, anyway.
Know what? You changed my mind. You're right.
I mean, I think Rock, I don't want to say he rolled the coattails, but when he ascended, the company was red hot.
He rolled the coattails long enough to maybe get to a higher plateau. Maybe. Right. Maybe. But only because Austin did all the lifting or did a lot of the lifting to get him there. Agreed. That's where I put all, I changed my mind, changed my vote. Don't write down The Rock. What am I, crazy? Stone Cold.
Okay.
Then The Rock, then Hulk Hogan.
All right. Well, there's your all-time promotion, Kevin. Good job. That was a fun game.
How am I going to pay all these guys?
Well, you could use the Matt Hardy FU money you got.
I need Matt Hardy money. Big money, Matt.
He's your money, Mark.
Big money. Big money. We need a lot more money marks to handle this payroll. Holy crap.
All right, Kev, let's quickly blow through some MLB playoff predictions, and then we get to hear that road story you've been teasing. So,
yes.
All right, we're going first round in the AL, Kansas City Angels.
You know, everybody's going to say Kansas City because they got a lot of momentum from last night. I go with the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. I think they have the horses and the arms to go all the way.
Yeah, I think KC is happy to be here. Momentum's just as good as the next day's pitcher, so I think LA
Wouldn't shock me if it's a sweep.
I'd say I'm going to give them 4. I think KC wins one game at home.
So. Okay.
All right, Detroit, Baltimore. A couple flawed teams, a couple powerful teams.
I love Baltimore in this. I don't trust Detroit's pitching.
Wow, that's crazy to say, huh?
I know, but I think Verlander is vulnerable.
Yeah, but is he even going to pitch?
Porcello, I don't trust him.
No, you don't need him either. You got Price, you got Scherzer, and you got Anibal Sanchez. Is he back?
I don't know if he's back, but I know I got Scherzer, and I know I got Price. I've seen Scherzer only got lit up once in like the last 6 weeks. Price got smoked two or three times. Verlander had a down year, 4.5 ERA. Porcello went sleepy time August 1st and has not had but maybe one quality start since then.
I don't think Porcello will even be in the mix. Is this in Baltimore, do we know?
Dan, I think so. Find out for me. I think they have home field.
Okay. That makes it trickier. Yeah, Baltimore's got home field. So that makes it trickier. I still like Detroit. I think they just got a little bit more playoff tested. I just don't think Baltimore's got the pitching. Like, I know they can hit. But if those pitchers of Detroit do get hot, and Scherzer's going game one against Tillman, I think this goes five, and I think Detroit takes it. A part of me is because I hate the Orioles, but
okay, I
hate the Tigers too. I hate them both. Like, this is the worst. Like, I don't like any. The only team I like is I like the Oakland, and I like Kansas City. I don't see Kansas City. I hate the Angels too. So I'm hoping like no AL team wins it unless the Royals get hot. But all right, so you have LA and Baltimore. In the ALCS, I got LA Detroit, and I say I think Detroit finds it. I think somehow they turn it on and they make it back to the World Series.
I'm going to go Angels. I go the Angels over Detroit or Baltimore. The Detroit-Baltimore series is like a middleweight prize fight where they go the distance and they're both bloodied and battered five games and weakened. I think Anaheim steamrolls the Royals and is a little fresher and a little more prime shape when they get to the ALCS.
All right, so let's go to the NL. We got the Cardinals and the Dodgers. I feel like these two teams play every year. Dodgers are going to be due one of these years, so I'm going to take them to beat the Cardinals.
You said before about being a flawed team. This is a team that's on the ropes emotionally. Is that disharmony in the clubhouse and the fighting? Is it good or is it bad? I think that they're on the rails enough to where they can take advantage of some situations. I think St. Louis is a more sound team. I think they're more sound. They don't have Clayton Kershaw. No one else does. But I don't fear the Dodgers after Kershaw. And I think St. Louis can – I think overall they're a better team because I had them winning anyway. So I had them winning the National League. So I got to go with them.
Ugh.
But Kershaw is the best pitcher of our time right now. He's fantastic.
All right, it looks like the Giants are going to advance. They're up 7-0 in the seventh, and they will go into Washington. I think Washington's looking for some revenge. They crapped out their first go-around a couple years ago. Home field throughout the NL playoffs. I'm going to take the Nats here.
I agree with you. I think the Nats will win, and I look forward to that. I look forward to them winning. I kind of like this team. I like some of the players on the team. I miss Davey Johnson. I like Davey. He was my Mets manager in 86. So
the if it's Giants Cardinals again, I might just put my head. If it's Giants Cardinals, like Tigers Angels, I'm just gonna put my head through the wall and turn.
Yeah,
the
I know.
Giants Cardinals again. All right. I like. I'm gonna take LA. I think they edge out Washington.
I would go with LA as well. I go LA Cardinals, and I think the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim win, but it'll be fun. It's good. I would love to see Kansas City go, though. Wouldn't it be just as a different ballpark?
Oh, yeah. I'm rooting for Kansas City, Washington. Like, I think that'd be the most fun. I think MLB would off themselves if they got that. I mean, they clearly want LA, right? I mean, that's their only viable option.
You know what? Because look back, the Subway Series in New York did horrible ratings. Didn't do the numbers of others. I think that you got to have a little East Coast, West Coast thing.
So LA, Baltimore?
L.A., Baltimore, when did they play? 68? 67?
I don't know.
71? Long time ago. That could be good. Two traditional teams. Very nice. Thank God
Angels
the A's are
Washington,
out.
Washington, maybe?
Ugh. No, there's no juice in that for me. Yeah. Washington?
I mean, Baltimore, I Washington, you get the Beltway thing, but then you lose your West Coast.
You got three opportunities, really, for Beltway. Right, because you got the Angels, Dodgers, Kansas City, St. Louis, Baltimore, and Washington. You had A's, Giants until last night.
Well, I think the Cardinals have proven they're not a draw over the last couple of years. I mean, even with the Red Sox, the numbers were down last year. I think they're probably hoping on L.A., to be honest with you. I think, you know, San Fran, I don't think they were much of a draw either. I think the Dodgers are their best bet to draw a crowd.
Let me ask you a question. Did you cry? You're a big Yankees fan.
Mm-hmm.
Did you cry Derek Jeter's last game?
I did not cry. I got some goosebumps. Does any player think of all the things that had to break right in that last home game for him to get that shot to win the game? I mean, they had to build the lead. Robertson had to blow the lead. Jeter had to be up third. The first guy had to get on. He had to get the second. Like, so much had to go right for him to have that moment. It's kind of mind-blowing, isn't it?
It is. I read a tweet that Tommy Dreamer sent out. He loves the fact that he's in the wrestling business because he got a tweet from Sandman that said the Jeter thing was a work. So,
I mean,
everybody in wrestling thinks everything is a work. So.
I mean, it was just a crazy moment. Like,
yeah.
If one guy in the Yankees makes an out instead of getting on base, Jeter doesn't bat in that. It's so much went right to get to that point, which is just crazy. And the stuff at Fenway, some of it was a little over-manufactured, but the moment, him getting the hit and then getting taken out and the crowd chanting his name and everything was really cool. So
only good thing that happened in Boston this year.
Yes, ever. All right, tell us that road story, Kevin. I'm going to sit back and I'll talk to you in a couple weeks.
Do you want to hear a bar fight story or do you want to hear a driving story?
Bar fight. We already heard one driving story.
Bar fight story was great. I got in one bar fight. I didn't do very well, but it pays to have good friends. We're in LA at the Marriott at the bar, and I am drinking with, this is like a murderer's row when you start to think about this. I'm drinking with Dean Malenko, who was the least tough guy in this group next to me. Perry Saturn, who would kill everyone. Farouk Bradshaw, Godfather, and Meng. So we're standing there and we're drinking beers. I think somebody bought some shots. It's starting to get on. We're mainly standing up at high top tables. All of a sudden, some fan decides to walk in front of me in the middle of the group. And he says something to me. And for whatever reason, it just caught me weird. So, and maybe because I was bombed. So anyway, I take a swing at the guy, right? Barely graze him. Now drinks are flying on the ground. High top table gets bumped. You know, it's crash, bang, boom, spill. And I'm trying to get this guy. Coach is with us too. Jonathan Coachman. He was also at the table. So I was definitely the weakest guy out of anybody there. For whatever reason, the fan decides to step in my face, whatever. And because I'm dumb and drunk, I take a swing at him. Well, I also, as I'm trying to get this guy now, coach is holding me back. So, JR, what instrument, what weapon do you think that I draw? What do you think I grab to hit this guy with?
I'm going to say you grabbed the little thing that holds the bill, the little book.
Very close. I grabbed a squeeze bottle of ketchup.
Oh, boy. Regular Psycho Sid.
I was trying to hit the guy with it, right? Coach is pulling me back. All of this happens in the span of like 25 or 30 seconds. Because just as rapidly as this guy gets in my face, I take the swing, I grab the ketchup bottle, and coach is holding me back. My good friend Ming has the Tongan death grip on this guy. And is very quietly walking him to the opening of the bar inside the Marriott. It wasn't like a door that we open,
right.
You know, a saloon door or something like that. He just escorted him to the exit with his index and middle finger together on one side with the thumb on the other side of his gullet and just pushed him as he let go of the Tongan death grip. And then the kind of the bouncer that was sitting outside was like, you know, and Meng kind of looked at him and said, he needs to go. And the bouncer quickly grabs him and coach is calming me down. I'm okay. I'm cool. I thank Meng. I apologize to everybody. I buy a round of drinks. We go back to drinking and that was it. My one and only bar fight in the WWE. I give myself a win for that bar fight. I landed the only punch. It was a grazing blow. I went to pick up a weapon, albeit a plastic ketchup bottle. And like I said, it pays to have good friends and friends that are much bigger and stronger than you, thanks to banging the Tongan death grip. So there's my one bar fight. Should we wrap now?
Let's go home.
Do you want to do more?
I was going to put the condiments back in the fridge so we don't have any problems. So why don't you take us out?
Well, listen, folks. If you're not swinging plastic ketchup bottles at anybody, I hope everybody has a nice, peaceful weekend. I know that starting in October, it's going to get very, very busy for Ring of Honor. So I'm going to be spending less and less time with my family. Because I'm going to be away a lot of weekends. So I'm going to make the most of this weekend with my family, and I hope you do the same as well. Once again, thank you to Matt Hardy for his time, for his candor, for his career. Thanks for everything that you've given us, Matt. And make sure you follow Matt online. Everything is at Matt Hardy Brand. Facebook, Twitter, et cetera, et cetera. You know how to find him. Make sure you do. We'll have another cavalcade of stars in a couple of weeks. We're lining up some good things. Who knows? It could be a PG-13 reunion right here on the show. But we'll definitely keep you informed. Follow us on Twitter. We'll let you know who the guest is. That'll be in a couple of weeks right here. It's the Kevin Kelly Show for Dan McGinn, for Justin Rosero. I'm Kevin Kelly. Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll see you next time on the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com.
You know, I'm only 50 now, and the phone could ring at any time.
Basically, because she had Tommy John and had a strong arm, she gave these awesome hand jobs that he was, like, obsessed with. Will you do my wife and I the honor of purchasing you?
Oh, wait a minute.
I don't get butt hurt.
Bye. I threw in braids. I wasn't paid enough. I kept them on because I couldn't afford a head.